Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
What up?
Dan, what did you do today?
What did I do? Yeah. Well, I prepared this episode.
Right.
I made an omelet.
What'd you have in that omelet?
Just a couple sorts of cheeses.
Couple sorts of cheeses. So it was a cheese omelet.
Yeah, it was a cheese omelet. I was gonna put some green pepper up in there. Also, I was thinking about throwing in a habanero, but my habaneros had gone bad.
Oh,
they turned.
That's bad.
So yeah, just a pepper jack, Colby.
Excellent
omelet.
Well, I've learned a lot about your day today. That is very similar to the, now this is a terrible bet.
You had a rough day watching the Keepers.
I was trying really hard. I watched the Keepers. The Keepers is fucking brutal,
man.
Put
you in a weird mood where you were yelling at me before the show that we need to destroy the Catholic Church.
Yeah, we do. It's a corrupt, evil institution that needs to be destroyed.
It's a decent theory.
Needs to be taken down.
So, Jordan, this is a show where we now know about each other's days, and
yes.
I know a bit about Alex Jones.
And I only know what you tell me about Alex Jones.
That is correct. That is how we play our little game here.
Yeah.
Our little game.
You know, it was when we had the bit. The bit was comforting to me. Now I feel adrift.
Somewhat, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm being thrown off a tiny bit because I unplugged and plugged back in everything on our soundboard in preparation for something we're about to unveil here in a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And it's causing severe problems, in terms of our headphones.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm being thrown off a little bit by like my headphones dropping out.
Yeah.
So this is going to be an adventure as we go along, but I think everything will be fine. I have prayed, for peace. Guidance.
All right. Well, not in the Catholic Church. I'll tell you that right now.
No, sir.
We are officially enemies of the Catholic Church.
But something that's not our enemy is a new donor.
Like, hey,
like
nice
to give
transition.
A shout out to. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome aboard as a policy wonk. Thank you so very much, Carrie.
I'm a policy wonk.
I'm staring at you.
I know. You and I both know what I know, and you know is what I want to say, but I can't.
I know your bit.
I can't say it.
You can't?
I can't do it.
Nope.
It's against the law now.
It is not sweary, Carrie Cassidy. I promise you that much. It is not, but thank you so much, Carrie. If you would like to support the show, you can do so by going to knowledgefight.com, clicking the support the show button. It would be appreciated, and you get to tell people at cocktail parties that you're a policy wonk.
Yeah, people love that. Mm. People love hearing at cocktail parties about, one, podcasts.
Sure.
Huge thing at cocktail parties.
Yep.
I was just at the Home Association. Man, they had so many fun conversations.
So many.
About, like, how much does your condo cost?
Mm-hmm.
Great conversation.
That's a great podcast. How much does your condo
Ooh,
cost?
Ooh, now that's a great game show. Is it even better? Put people behind a screen.
The price is right for this condo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a guy who's climbing up a mountain and yodeling or some shit.
Sure.
I don't remember.
At parties, podcast talk.
Yep.
Is the
yep.
shit. That's
oh,
what
yeah.
we're getting at. So, Jordan, today, what we're doing.
What?
We in the past, baby.
Yay!
We're back in 2009, going over February 17th and 18th.
Cool.
2009.
Cool.
Man, I found some fun stuff.
Okay.
I found some. You know what? It's a thing when we go back into the past where, it's one of the good opportunities for me to, really sink my teeth into some weirdos. And I think I found a championship weirdo today.
Okay.
He's no Daryl Hamamoto, but one of the guys.
For you, no one will ever be Daryl Hamamoto.
No.
You are in some sort of infatuated love with that man, and I will never understand it.
I also think he's gettable. You know what I mean?
You think he's gettable?
I mean, he's been fired by UC Davis now, so I think
he has been fired.
It's come up in the, go home and tell your mother you're brilliant, Facebook group, some posts he's made on Facebook clearly indicating that he's been fired from UC Davis, which can't imagine why.
They got him.
Yeah.
I think everybody at that school, like every administrator, the moment they figured it out, they were like, we got him this time. You're out of here.
Yeah, you found a 10-year loophole.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Exactly. Yeah, good work, guys.
So, Jordan, today here is an out-of-context drop from this episode before we end up talking about a championship weirdo.
Okay.
Somebody comes after me, they're going to get a ball-peen hammer upside their head repeatedly.
All right.
All right.
Fair enough.
All right.
Fair enough. That was
you would think only one shot would be necessary, apparently somebody comes after him, he's going to mercilessly and brutally beat them to death with a ball-peen hammer.
I'm not sure a ball-peen hammer is your best bet. In the hammer world, I'd go claw hammer.
As far as pain goes, I'm telling you, ball-peen is the way to go.
Not, I don't know. I still think claw hammer would be worse. But, that was in the middle of a conversation about, like, you don't even need a gun. You can have a hammer.
You can have a hammer.
Leave some nails in your car. It's plausible deniability that you might be building something. Whoa.
Wait, what did he just say?
Yeah, he
was like, here's your alibi.
Right, exactly.
You were just building something.
Yeah, you got a hammer.
Always carry a hammer with
stuff.
You always building things.
Weird.
If you happen to murder somebody with it.
Weird.
Hey, they can't prove shit.
You have nails.
Yeah.
A little later, he gets a call from a guy, and he's like, hey, Alex, I heard you talking about hammers earlier. I'll tell you the best thing, road flare. And then dead silence. Alex doesn't even respond to it.
Wait, just, what was he hoping would happen?
I don't know, like, you could scare someone with a road flare, I guess.
Oh.
I think he was hoping Alex would be like, you bet. That's my prediction, and it did not go great.
I was hoping that he would just be like talking about things you should have in your car. Mm. Just like,
first
hey,
aid kit.
Alex, blankets. Mm-hmm. What if it's cold? Your car breaks down. You're going to need some blankets.
Jumper cables.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Spare tire.
Water.
Water?
Couldn't hurt.
Don't need it.
Could assault someone with it.
You know what's even better than that for drinking, though?
What's that?
Road flares.
Absolutely.
A lot of stuff in
there. Quench your thirst.
Oh, yeah.
With a nice road flare.
Uh-huh.
So, Jordan, we're going to start today on February.
I feel like Alex Jones tried to trademark a name about road flares now.
I'm certain at
road
some point.
Road flare.
I'm certain he sold some at some point.
Yeah.
Anyway, we start here on the 17th, and Alex is talking geopolitics. And I'm going to... I don't really want to talk too deeply about this, but it's very interesting because it is yet another example of fundamental changes that have happened in Alex since 2009.
And the Wahhabists are based out of Saudi Arabia. Supposedly the group Al-Qaeda comes from. Four Wahhabist groups and then another Kurd group, but four of them Wahhabists, including the number three in Al-Qaeda, launching terror attacks against dams, police stations, military installations, sabotage of factories. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Listen,
and Iran
sabotage.
Has laid back and taken it. Iran has gone along with it all. They have taken it. These probes to stir them up and get them to have more intense rhetoric or to launch some type of military attack into Iraq. Poking them in the nose, hitting them over the head with a baseball bat, trying to get the bull to go hog wild.
So, at this point, Alex knows that people have a vested interest in trying to rile up Iran.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because that's not quite his tale now.
I don't understand what you're saying.
He does think that they're bad now.
Oh, he does?
Well, I mean, it's the same thing. We've already documented him talking about how the Iran nuclear program was peaceful.
Yep.
When he talks about it in 2009, and in the present day, he's like, they've always been trying to make a bomb.
It's a bad idea to start a war with Iran. And then cut to his boy starting a war with Iran, and he's like, hey, we should have started a war with Iran whenever I didn't want to start a war with Iran.
The parallels are going to become even starker in the next few clips.
Oh, boy.
It's really weird how close this is to the present day, even though it's so far away chronologically. So here, Alex talks a little bit more about the situation in Iran, and this is one of the reasons here, clips like this are one of the reasons that, unfortunately, I'm not able to do that time travel episode for Jim, where he talks about Netanyahu coming to America. I just think that there's a path we're on here.
Oh, do you mean the sequel to Coming to America
Indeed.
With Eddie Murphy?
Yes, absolutely.
That would be a great one. He's not quite a prince, but he is the prime minister. He starts working at McDonald's, turns it into a fascistic, apartheid state.
You could reuse a lot of gags from the first one.
You could.
So this is sort of indicative, I believe, of how there needs to be a journey as opposed to us just jumping to the destination.
It's a false flag attack, bottom line.
Drink. We got a false flag.
So this is outrageous. And Israel boldly is admitting that they are staging terror attacks in Iran. This is nothing new. I mean, imagine, they're publicly admitting they have hitmen, sabotage groups, front companies, and double agents to disrupt the regime's illicit weapons project, the experts say. And Israel's openly announcing this, so it'll be in Iranian TV and news. And so there is public pressure of the Iranian people to fight back.
So it's very clear in 2009, as we've already documented, this just reinforces it even, that Alex is pretty critical of the Israeli government. He's already been clear in the past that he is pro-Palestinian. He believes in what they're up to.
Right.
To a certain extent. And he's critical of Israel. He's pointing out that they're fucking with Iran.
Yeah.
You know, that's very, very different than currently. That's very different than even, I would say, a few years after this.
Right. What's interesting, though, is that Israel's still doing it. Pretty much, they've been pretty much playing by the same playbook for a long time.
Right.
Just trying to start shit with Iran.
Where Alex would now say, like, Iran, or, Israel isn't perfect, but they're Christian.
Yeah, it's
like,
yeah,
like,
sure,
like what he
sure
says with Russia.
You know, yeah.
They're Western. We need to defend them.
They're fighting off, they're throwing off globalist rule. And the problem with the globalists is they're against apartheid. And we gotta get rid of those guys. As you've already seen, I am pro-apartheid. Love me selling some gold from, war criminals. Love it.
So that's super weird. And that's why I don't want to jump to the end. Like, I don't want to read the end of this Choose Your Own Adventure book.
Uh-huh.
I want to follow the path that the book is taking me through, where how does Alex get from, cause if we were to go and listen to the episode with Netanyahu, we could make assumptions of what changed. I think I have a pretty good idea.
To
do with money.
Oh,
but that
Dan,
would
you're
be,
so cynical.
Maybe Alex has made me that way. Maybe repeated listening to this asshole breeds cynicism. But like, there could be something along the way that acts as a pivot point or a fulcrum sort of thing, and
right,
we would be remiss to not have that in the conversation.
Yeah.
So
we need to find the crux.
Exactly. So I told you this is going to become much more relevant to present day as it relates to Iran pretty quick. And here is where that happens.
So Israel launches covert war against Iran. Israel has launched a covert war against Iran as an alternative to direct military strikes against Tehran's nuclear program, U.S. intelligence sources have revealed. The most dramatic element of the decapitation program is the planned assassination of top figures involved in Iran's top operations. The assassination of leaders. Oh, we're in your country. We're going to kill your leaders. Hardcore act of war.
I can't imagine any country doing that.
And then Ahmadinejad will take the bait and say, if you do that, we'll wipe your state off the map. And then the media will say, for no reason, Ahmadinejad said he'd blow them up. How dare him? We're only blowing up their dams and shooting their police chiefs.
Isn't that weird?
God damn it.
Isn't that weird?
I hate it whenever he does have an understanding of how things would go if what he thought was real.
Sure.
Like, he's putting out a prediction of exactly what's going on right now, which is insane at this point in time because it doesn't make any sense. But if you're an insane person creating conspiracy theories, you know exactly how people would react to an actual conspiracy. So he's nailing it on the head in this fake world.
Right.
And then unable to see it whenever it's part of the real world.
Perhaps. But
fascinating. Or he's very, very aware of it and he's just too far up Trump's asshole to escape now.
That's probably more
likely.
He
is probably some dirty rocks up Trump's dirty asshole right now.
Probably.
Yeah.
But the thing that I find more interesting is that Alex really clearly understands that, like, when Ahmadinejad comes out and is, like, blustery rhetoric, it's in response to threats that are being made to him.
Yeah.
And in the same thing in the present day with, you know, Trump's now famous all caps, we're gonna fucking murk you, dude.
Yep.
Tweet to Iran. That only happened because Mike Pompeo said that Iran is being run as a mafia.
Yeah.
And then they responded, peace with Iran is the greatest peace.
Yep.
War with Iran is the greatest war.
Right.
Which is, I would say, a measured threat. You know, it's not even really a threat. It's more because the peace part is in there, too.
Yeah. It's more like, come on, let's do this because neither of us want the worst war.
Right.
The worst war is bad for everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's just saying that, like, if we go whatever direction we're going, it's going to be extreme. You know, like, peace or war.
Right.
Either one is going to be towards the end of that spectrum because of, I mean, we're in extreme days.
Yeah.
That movie.
You know,
Christian
what?
Extreme sports movie that I brought up the other episode.
I don't know why leaders do that kind of blustery bullshit. I think they would be much more successful if they just threw shade.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if the Ayatollah comes out
like
and it's just like,
him?
No, and it's just like, man, you guys really want to start a ground war and invade Iran. That's a great idea. Look at what Iraq did to you guys. Like, if you just threw
eggplant,
some shade.
Eggplant,
yeah, exactly. Just throw some shade and everybody be like, ooh, America got burned. And then we'd go away.
Nah, not these That's days. Too, that would probably start a war more be, than like that. That would be, Trump would be like, button. I don't give a shit.
I don't get owned on Twitter.
Yeah. That would be the response to that. I just think it's fascinating because it's the exact same scenario that played out, what was it, last week, in present day. And Alex, in 2009, had a clear awareness of like, this is being done not in a vacuum. And you're, he does the stupid voice to indicate disdain for the people who think it comes from nowhere.
I know.
And now he's fine with like Trump, like, hitting the volley back of violence.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you're crazy, crazy things make sense to you, except while crazy things are happening, in which case you're too crazy to accept that this crazy is the correct crazy. But when you were crazy in a way that was normal back then, you understand how crazy people would act if everything's crazy now.
It's possible.
He's the Hannibal Lecter of conspiracy theories, is what I'm saying.
So, in this next clip, we get a little break from the starting off on the Iran-Israel issues, and we get into a caller who's crazy, which is just fun.
But I was just wondering if you noticed during the inauguration, we know that they always announce what they're going to do. And sometimes they do that in symbolism and doublespeak.
Nice.
And when Robert delivered the inauguration oath.
They messed it up on purpose.
They messed it up on purpose. He didn't stutter or he was very purposeful. And he was so determined that he actually repeated the oath the wrong way. And I went ahead and looked up some of the words in the dictionary to see what maybe they were trying to say. And another definition for execute, which is one of the words that was misplaced in the sentence, which changes the meaning of it. To execute office of president also means to end the office of president. And it may be that they're announcing that Obama will be the last president, and he will bring in the New World Order, North American Union, and end the office of the presidency.
No, I agree. He repeatedly said, execute the office of the president. And then they gave the oath, quote, in secret, no media, but one White House pool photographer. But it was reported that he then didn't even swear in on a Bible the next time. So this is all symbolism. Very important to these people.
All right. All right. Well done. Good job looking at the OED.
That guy just called because he had some amazing information.
I have.
And that is, did you know that execute has more than one meaning?
Dun, dun, dun.
All right. Now you think, of course you do, because right. You've never even looked at a dictionary. You think that the word execute in this speech only means one thing.
Sure, sure, sure.
But if you look it up in the dictionary,
uh-huh.
It can mean more than one thing. So if a word can mean more than one thing, and you think it means one thing, they might think you think it means one thing, but you mean the other thing.
Double speak.
That's how you do it.
Double
That's
speak.
How you signal to the Illuminati as opposed to a letter,
See,
or an email, or a phone call.
The problem is that most people are monolingual. You know what I'm saying?
Or monodefinition?
Well, Alex's listeners and Alex... They're bilingual. They know how to speak globalist.
Ah, that's true.
They know how to get those little words that have multiple meanings and use the wrong ones.
Dude, do not tell them about your and your.
No.
They will lose their shit.
Yeah, it'd be nuts.
Maybe that's why they can never spell it right, is because there's only one definition for them.
Yeah, yeah.
They've never looked it up in the dictionary.
And if they did,
oh my God.
It'd be a conspiracy.
It'd be wild.
I don't know about possessives.
All right. So when he said, it's my job to execute your office of the presidency, you don't realize that he meant you are the presidency.
Right.
And that is why he's executing you. And we need to find out who R is, because he is going to kill R.
No one fucking tell InfoWarriors about like Latin and Greek, like the declension of nouns. No one tell them about that level of language, because they're going to all fucking study circles around us.
The first person to diagram a sentence for an InfoWarriors is gone. We got to get, that's a traitor.
They're still doing
that's
it.
That's a traitor.
They're still doing it right now. They started in 92. And they're right. Still at that fucking chalkboard. Like, no, no, no. That is an adverb. That is an adverb.
We are looking for the object of the sentence. Not the direct object. God damn it!
Well, I gave you the object directly. What do you what are you saying? What are you saying?
Hold on. Now, did you know? Did you know that the word direct can mean straight to, and it can also mean to control? So you guys are trying to direct my sentences, and I don't need this bullshit.
Globalist doublespeak. So that's all good and well, but I found this next clip, and it's in the middle of what I would describe as a panicky, but overall not all that far out version of a discussion of the situation with GM. Like, GM's in trouble at this point in 2009. Yes. And so Alex is talking about that. That's not important.
No, of course not.
Because
why would I imagine that it was?
When I was listening to this episode, I had to play it back a couple times. I had to like scroll back. I think this might be an embedded Chrysler commercial.
What?
But I'm not positive.
No.
I need you to listen to this.
Okay.
And tell me what you think.
Okay.
Because this is really weird. Put the mic down for this because it's subtle.
Shares of General Motors fell 12% Tuesday as the automaker prepared to submit a new survival plan to the U.S. officials later in the day under the terms of the $13.4 billion government bailout. GM and smaller rival Chrysler have been seeking concessions from the United Auto Workers Union and their creditors to show how they can be made viable under the $17.4 billion federal loan package approved in December. You know, I got to say, Chrysler's really putting out some great cars the last few years. Too bad they're probably going under or to become some new globalist company, but really some great cars, a side issue. Both automakers face a Tuesday deadline. Yeah, I drive a Charger. Love it. Side issue. But automakers, great value, too, for the car you get.
It just keeps going. It's very weird. The first time he said it, like, oh, Chrysler, that's a great company.
Chrysler's been putting out some great cars the past 2 years.
Like, that's weird, but I know he does like cars.
Yeah, he likes,
enough
he
that,
likes
like,
cars.
That's not that weird. Then he cuts off in the middle of a sentence to be like, I drive a Charger. Great car.
That's a side issue.
Great car. Side issue.
Anyways, some great value there.
Great value.
No, the world is ending. You're going to want a value-based shop at this point. We're in a recession. So,
I have to ask you, do you think there's any chance that's an embedded commercial?
No. I think he is just...
That, he does say that he thinks they might go out of business.
Yeah.
So that's probably not what the copy they'd want you to read. That's probably outside of Chrysler's best interests for advertising. But then...
No,
but then
I think
he does
he just...
say, he does say, like, they're going to go out of business or become a globalist company.
Which is a weird thing to say.
But that's what Chrysler would want his audience to be afraid of. They're
because then they would be, they would need to buy Chrysler cars.
In order to keep them
in order to keep them from
business.
Going to the globalists.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a third stage all right. embedded ad.
That's crazy.
It sounds bad a little bit up front, but the reality is now all these wingdings are going to go buy Chryslers. Boom. They're safe.
So you're saying that
so
Alex saved Chrysler in the
single-handedly with one very weird accidental commercial in the middle of the February 17th, 2009 episode of the show. He single-handedly saved Chrysler.
I think it's more like he just really loves cars and he was really bored by what he was about to talk about. So he's just talking about cars.
I think
cars.
So. Yeah. He doesn't want to read anymore.
No.
He's also, I should tell you that this overnight, this 17th to 18th overnight, is this really weird thing, because he had just, I believe on the evening of the 17th, he does Coast to Coast AM, and so he's working all day and trying to finish the Obama deception, then he does this show that's on at midnight,
yeah,
and so he basically is running on no sleep for a lot of this,
yeah,
and then something really fucked up happens the night of the 17th, which we'll get to later, so he's just like, I would not be surprised if he's running on no fumes.
Yeah.
At this point. Just
he doesn't, like, he doesn't even have super male vitality yet to give him that boost.
No, he just has,
he can't put that on any burgers.
He just has Beyond Tangy Tangerine to boost him up, made by Joel Wallach, a veterinarian. He
put on some of them Diamond Gusset jeans, hoping for
good
the best.
Go.
A little bit too tight.
I think Diamond Gusset might have stopped, advertising with them by now. I've not heard any Diamond Gusset commercials.
Okay.
It makes me very sad. It's just survival seeds.
Yeah, those were the days, man.
That soap. Yeah, that soap. Although I haven't heard anything from Marty Schachter in a while.
Where's his limericks coming from?
Yeah, I know. He's sort of been MIA for
a
bit.
Yeah.
So.
It is hard to write original limericks these days, though.
All of those were not original. All of those were street jokes.
I know, but he's writing them on his own. He's writing limericks that he, it turns out, are exactly street jokes that he heard, like, by accident 20 years ago.
Oh, so, like, parallel thinking?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, no, like, I forgot that I heard that, and then you write it, and you're like, I'm a genius.
He's reading them straight out of, like, Milton Berle's dirty joke book. That's what he's doing. We all know this is what's going on. So, now, Jordan, we get to a chunk in this episode.
Yes.
That makes me so fucking happy.
Okay.
This isn't the crazy dude. That's going to be at the end of this episode. But this is the other, like, what I would call marquee excitement for Dan.
Okay.
In this episode.
All right.
And that is, a caller calls in and wants to talk about how there are a bunch of occult people running the world. So a bunch of world leaders are deeply into the occult, and they are Satanists.
Does he think he is coming up with an original idea for this show?
He wants Alex to provide citations. But not
real ones.
Not in a confrontational way. It's more like, I had an argument with my buddy about this, and I need to be reminded of, who are you talking about?
Right.
And so Alex comes in, and man, all this stuff is so fucking fun. All of it is so wrong. It's so easily traced back to what he's talking about. This is like, this is where it's like, this is going to be like 30 minutes of this podcast that is all, you're busted. Just all of it, just constant. What are you talking about, Alex?
Okay.
So here's the first one, where we begin our journey.
You've got a great memory for things like this. You've mentioned some of these bizarre occult antics that some of the world leaders like Blair and others have engaged in. Can you cite a couple of those? I hate to put you on the spot, but I want to write.
Yeah,
about
it's
that.
Been in the London Telegraph and a bunch of other publications that Tony Blair. You know, guys, Google this during the break.
Christ,
Tony
really
Blair's wife engages in occult activities. Tony Blair does ritual. Stay there. I'll think about the headlines during the break and try to pull them up from memory. My computer is working.
All right. So you brought up Tony Blair.
My internet connection is bad.
Not great.
Nope.
So Tony Blair's wife got brought up there. We'll talk about her a little bit. Sherry Blair. Do you know anything about her? Do you remember any of this shit?
No, she's evil, though.
I actually think that she might not be as evil as you think. She's had to apologize a couple times for statements that make a whole lot of sense.
Oh, yeah.
Like one of them about, like, a Palestinian suicide bomber. I believe it might have been a suicide bombing. I forget the specific details. But she had to apologize because she made a statement that was, you know, not like a curated public statement or anything. But her response was, I think until we live in a world where young people don't think that blowing themselves up is a good solution, I don't know what we're talking about. Something along those lines.
Oh, so she's right.
Well, I don't know.
And she had to apologize for it.
I don't know if she's always right, but she's made statements like that that are like, yeah, all right, I kind of dig this. Now, I don't know too much about Sherry Blair. I'm not going to tell you that I've read all of her autobiographies.
She's married to Tony Blair. She's evil enough.
Sure. But it appears that she does have a little bit of a spiritualist streak in her. So
okay.
Alex isn't like totally making things up here.
Like what kind of spiritualist? Are we talking like 1920s revival, kind of like seances and that kind of stuff?
A little. There's some seances.
There's
involved.
Some seance. Okay.
There's some other stuff that we'll get into some of the specifics in the next clip. But so Sherry Blair has a couple of friends, a mother and daughter pair named Sylvia and Carol Kaplan. Carol Kaplan was a woman who was a style guide or a style advisor for Tony and Sherry Blair. So they had a long-standing relationship, and it turns out that Sylvia Kaplan she claimed that she could speak to the spirit world. And it seems that Sherry Blair believed her.
I feel like if you're a style guide, you have to also believe that you can speak to the other
world.
That's
her mom.
Oh, okay.
The style guide's mom.
Okay.
Who was like a ex-ballet dancer of sorts. She was in the late 60s when she was doing this mediumship shit.
Uh-huh.
So it turns out that the two of them were in contact and there's...
With the other side.
Sure. There's some credible, citations and evidence that they might have talked about ghosts.
Okay.
You know, like, but I don't really care. You know, that's not.
I mean, everybody's talked about ghosts.
That doesn't charm me at all. It's just sort of like on the level of who cares.
Yeah.
And also she has like a crystal necklace that she thinks is magical. But like half the
Sherry Blair does?
Half of the people we know have fucking rocks.
Yeah, I was going to
so
say.
Like,
yeah,
not, that's not.
You scratch a comic hard enough, sooner or later you're going to find crystals.
You're going to hear about them crystals. Yeah. Turns out half of the artistic world is like, we're really desperate. The world sucks right now. Wait.
How about crystals? About
quartz?
Yeah, that'll fit.
I had a little phase. I still actually do think that there's something to it, but it's not about the rock being magical at all. It's just something you can sort of project onto, having a little totem of something.
Right.
Sort of a psychosomatic benefit, I think, I gleaned from it.
I see what you're saying.
I don't critique anyone for it, but it also is like, this isn't worshiping the devil. So interestingly, Carol Kaplan, the style advisor, the younger one, her boyfriend was a man named Peter Foster, whose main claim to fame is having been arrested for fraud in at least 6 countries, ranging from medical fraud
to
horse raiding.
It's tough to do. It's tough to get all 6.
He also had horse racing related cons that he had pulled in the past.
Well, yeah, but that's innocent stuff. We've seen Ocean's 11.
He was deported from Ireland for trying to sell franchise rights for 200,000 euros to sell fake slimming pills. That was in like 2002. So,
I like any crime that actually gets you deported from a country like Ireland.
Right.
Like, it's not even like, you're not from here. It's just like, God, you're such a dick. We need you gone from the entire country.
Right.
No prison time. Just go.
You've been arrested in countries for nigh on 20 years now.
Yeah.
For frauds. You're doing it here now. You gotta leave.
Yeah.
We've had enough.
Yeah. If you get arrested for fraud, if you get deported for fraud from one country, shouldn't you be immediately suspect in all other countries?
Turns out you can use aliases, I think. I think that might have been some of it.
Okay.
So Foster worked his way into Carol Kaplan's life because she was already friends with the Blairs. And once he was there, he worked on some sort of a con, and he got an outrageously good deal for the Blairs on a pair of flats in Bristol. This was a scandal.
Yes.
Because they got a weirdly cheap couple of flats, and it was all worked out through this Peter Foster guy.
Okay.
Who was the boyfriend of their style advisor.
If you know the cost of property in London, you know that a pair of weirdly cheap flats is worth ungodly amounts of money.
Right. And so it came out that he was the one who was behind this deal, and it also then came out that he has a 20-year history of fraud, and that became a problem.
That should be a bigger problem than I think it was.
Right. So as before the public aspect of it set in, he began a publicity campaign designed to make himself appear like he was much closer friends to the Blairs than he actually was in order to extract publicity for himself in order to shield himself from investigations and stuff like that.
Right.
And because he was dating their style advisor, he had done things like go to their house for Christmas. And so he used that as a way to be like, they had me over for Christmas, as opposed to I went with my girlfriend who was their style advisor.
I know why he's been such a both successful and strongly unsuccessful con man over the years.
Also, he dated Samantha Fox back when she was really young.
Of course.
Pop star Samantha
of
Fox.
Of course. Why wouldn't he have?
Holy shit. It's crazy.
That was his first con.
I read a comment from her that was like, I would never fall for him ever again, like fall for his tricks ever again.
Yeah.
But I was in my early 20s. I was vulnerable. I came from a bad home.
Yeah.
And he was able to manipulate me.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, fuck. This guy, that is his life. So the issue here is not with any kind of spiritualism that Sherry Blair may or may not believe in. The issue is that we have in front of us is a bunch of really gullible people. Carol Kaplan fell under Peter Foster's sway to the point of becoming pregnant by him,
Jesus.
And the Blairs accepted a very clearly shady real estate deal at his direction. It stands to reason that they're falling for this guy's shit. It's well within the character to fall for Kaplan's mother's mediumship, too.
Yeah.
That's the real conversation that anyone should have about this situation.
Why are our world leaders that dumb?
Right. So further, the angle that, that's the angle that Alex should be taking. These people are fucking stupid.
Yeah.
They fall for obvious con men. That would be a valid line to make because as it stands now, the only thing he could really be outraged by, it only makes sense if he believes that Kaplan's mother really is communicating with spirits. It doesn't make sense otherwise.
Yeah, if your biggest issue, his biggest issue is, how come I don't get to communicate with the spirits?
That's one complaint that could be made that might be veiled in there, but like, if he doesn't believe that it's possible to have seances and talk to the spirits, then I don't
know. It doesn't matter if he believes it, they believe it, Dan.
No, that doesn't matter.
Oh, no, you're right. It doesn't matter.
That doesn't
matter. None of this matters.
And if you don't believe it, but they believe it, then your real complaint is, they're dumb.
Yeah, again.
Do you want your world leaders being people who talk to ghosts? Then we could talk. Then we'd have a like, good point.
Now, I was a fan of the labor mayor who could speak to aliens. Or not Simon mayor. Parks. He was a councilman, right?
Yeah, Simon Parks.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a fan.
To aliens. He fucks
that's
aliens.
True. That's true. Yeah. Well, a few times a year, yeah. Which I think is a fine number.
Right. So the only manifest aspects of the spiritualism of Sherry Blair is that one time in 2001 on vacation in Mexico, the Blairs went to a steam bath, smeared each other with melons and papaya, and did some primal screaming in a rebirth ceremony. But
why are our world leaders that dumb?
No, I would love to do that. I think that would be awesome.
I know, and you shouldn't be a world leader.
Nope, that's true. Also, primal scream therapy was incredibly popular for a long
time.
Yeah,
that's
here in
true.
America. Also, they consulted a feng shui expert about 10 Downing Street and about civic planning in terms of streets and that sort of thing. It's all really super benign stuff. It might be a waste of time. You could make that argument, but otherwise super benign. And the only ultimate policy result that this had is something that Alex should be 100% excited about. In 2002, quote, the government announced that for the first time since the creation of the NHS, alternative remedies could be granted the same status as conventional treatments, despite the absence of evidence that they might cure the sick. The switch, quote, is thought to have been influenced by Sherry Blair's interest in alternative therapy. Alex theoretically is able to sell his pills much easier in the UK because of Sherry Blair's spiritualism.
God damn it.
Right.
Why are our world leaders so dumb?
Right. So this all is very fascinating to me. And most of the information that is out there is either not true or gossip or strong embellishments of this sort of thing. So now Alex went out to break while his computer booted up. And he comes back from break with this about Tony Blair.
Yeah, I, Googled Tony Blair occult. And thousands of hits came up. It's a bunch of mainstream.
First of all.
So why didn't he just tell that one guy to Google it?
That'd be great. I would say that also this is, while we have our board of differences up there, if we are having a board of similarities, one of the other ones is not understanding how Google searches work.
Right.
Just because you type in Tony Blair occult and like 100,000 results show
That's
up.
That means it's true. If there were, if there were 100,000 of, yeah.
Not about whether it's true or not. That does not mean there's 100,000 articles.
Oh.
About this.
Okay.
That means that Google found possibilities, but if you get to page 3 or 4, it's going to be something completely different.
Yeah.
You have maybe 6 articles about this, and they're not articles. They're from blogs.
Right.
Anyway.
Stream articles. I remember the fact that he goes to all these different occultic sites around the world and does these different rituals. He did an Aztec rebirthing ritual. Major British papers have reported literally hundreds of times that I remember that every morning he is possessed by a spirit he calls the spirit of light. And sometimes it makes him flop around on the floor.
So he has epilepsy?
So
does Tony Blair have epilepsy? Is that what he just revealed?
Well, I mean, the ultimate truth may be that, but I think more likely we're dealing with bullshit.
Yeah.
So the only reference I can find to this story about the light possessing Tony Blair.
I'm very interested in this story.
This is on a 2007 blog that, without a link or citation, claims that the Times of London was reporting that Tony Blair sought the advice of the spirits. The blog, which is called Boys from Bohemia, claims that in an article from Vanity Fair, quote, when Blair has had clashes with Gordon Brown, he sought the advice from Kaplan, the style advisor, who got her mother Sylvia to do a New Age reading involving a hidden force called the light. Foster said, Tony would call and Carol would say, I'll ask Mum to channel on this and ring you back. Did you hear that at the end? Foster said. This is all information coming from Peter Foster, the years and decades-long con man
God
who had worked his
it.
Way into their life. All of this information comes from him trying to smear the Blairs after he, I mean, this is sad. Unfortunately, Carol Kaplan, the pregnancy ended in a miscarriage.
Oh, that
and
is
the
sad.
Two of them ended up separated. And since then, he's gone on a fucking tear trying to say that she was having an affair with Tony Blair.
Right,
that child
right,
was
right,
actually
right, right.
Tony Blair's.
I gotcha.
He's come out with all sorts of smear campaigns against them. Guess what? This is another one.
Yeah.
This is amazing. So, the London Times article that Alex and this blog are citing, they don't directly cite it. They don't put a link to it. And there's a reason. Because the title of it is, quote, Con Man Foster.
Ha, 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 to that.
Full title, Con Man Foster Kicks PM in Pants. The article begins, quote, the Australian con man at the center of the Sherrygate affair has made a fresh series of claims about the Prime Minister as he tries to promote a book covering his relations with the Blairs. Foster, who has called himself the human headline, has produced no evidence for his latest allegations.
Yeah.
So all of this comes from another con man, Peter Foster, trying to make a bigger name for himself and create a bigger story. Alex knows that. If he's ever looked into any of the sources, if he's gone down to the bottom of page one in Google.
Or if he's just read the headline.
No, because if he read the Boys from Bohemia blog or something like that, they say it comes from a Times of London,
yeah,
Vanity Fair article or whatever. And he doesn't know who Peter Foster is. He doesn't know that because he didn't look into it. He could just assume like, oh my God, it says Times of London. This is true.
Right.
He acts like his listeners. I think. But I think he does it intentionally because if he knows more, it's harder for him to lie.
Yeah. So that's true.
I think that's
plausible
probably
deniability.
Yeah.
If you never learn anything, you're always right.
Yep. So, as to the charge of Tony Blair and Carol, Sherry Blair being super into the occult, I'm going to give that a soft you busted. Because Sherry Blair is into that stuff.
Right.
So, you know, you're embellishing off something that's benign and actually real, but the other stuff is a complete lie. And Alex, you're being tricked by a con man.
I also kind of think that having a style advisor is, in its own way, a con, right?
Well, no, that's a con being done by the style advisor.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's no way. Just wear a suit.
But I'll tell you
go
what.
Go buy a suit and have the guy say, this is a good suit, and then you're good.
I need one. I definitely need a style advisor. So if anyone wants to con me, Feel free to give me some style advice.
All right.
So, that's the UK. What do you think about the world, Le Monde Francophone?
I don't think about it much.
What do you think about the world of the spirits, l'esprit en français?
The French spirits?
Mais oui. What do you think about
that? Do they speak English?
Do you think there are any French leaders?
Are there any French style advisors?
There are no style advisors in this story.
In France?
Not
period?
Not in this story.
Are they outlawed in France, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Ce n'est pas bien. C'est illégal.
Style.
So in this next clip, we learn about how this insidiousness of spiritual Satanism
it's everywhere.
Has also infested Le Monde Francophone, which I've already said. I should have just said France.
I was trying to remember specifically who it was that you reported as going on howling at the moon. Was it a Frenchman?
It was actually...
A Francois Mitterrand.
Okay.
And this is memory if you bring him up. It's on record that the architect, the Japanese architect...
Who's the Japanese architect?
He's actually Chinese-born American. not Japanese.
Who built the Louvre pink gold pyramid... Francois Mitterrand did a ritual in there. There's a black pyramid inside inverted.
I imagine that was just an opening ceremony or something like that. I don't
Pretty
think it
fun.
Was a ritual.
You build a pyramid, you put an upside down black pyramid inside of it. I've played Final Fantasy VII.
Sure.
So above, you know, as below, as above.
Right.
You know, so below. And then Mitterrand, because it was so important, went to to a mountaintop, did a ritual, and then howled. And then it's been in the news that a lot of the famous liberal feminists in Austin go out and that's even in the news and do rituals and it's so cute. But then we talk about it and they call us kooks when they're even admitting it. But yes, Francois Mitterrand, a bunch of them howl.
All right.
A bunch of them howl.
I would like to take us back to that episode where he was talking to, the 30-year-old who wouldn't leave his house.
It's a great idea to go out and howl at the moon.
Remember when he was telling him, hey, have you ever taken off your shirt and run around on a mountaintop in a full moon?
Yeah, howling.
What's the difference?
Well, he's a guy who won't leave his house. This is Francois Mitterrand.
Francois Mitterrand.
Everybody knows that Francois Mitterrand has, who is this guy?
What?
What's he do?
What are you talking about?
What's he do?
Francois Mitterrand?
Yeah.
We'll get back to it. He was the president of France.
But he was the president of France?
He was.
Oh, man.
I need a little more information from Alex, though, before we get into it, because I need some specifics. I know mentioned the Louvre Pyramid.
Howling at the Moon.
Sure.
Howling at the Moon.
Wrong song. He's going to get into Ozzy Osbourne's Bark at the Moon.
But it's not as perfect as the Fantagram song.
It's true.
Type in Francois Mitterrand. Louvre Pyramid 666. with 666 pieces of glass and him doing rituals when it was completed right before he left the presidency before Jacques Chirac.
Okay. Interesting. So.
Are there 666 panes of glass in the Louvre?
That's what most of Alex's claims come back to. He's saying that that's an homage to the great beast.
Right.
He ties this to François Mitterrand just because Mitterrand was president of France at the time.
And, howls at the moon.
Sure. And he'd been, the pyramid was part of his, Grand Projets, initiative where he was trying to create a bunch of modern,
tourist destinations.
Somewhat. Yeah. But he was trying to upgrade the city into being more of like, a lot of people didn't like it and fair enough.
Yeah.
Cause the pyramid does not match the old feel of the, right. The Louvre. You know, you have this giant, but anyway, it doesn't matter. The Louvre Pyramid was designed by Chinese-born American architect I.M. Pei, and official schematics show 603 diamond-shaped panes of glass used, as well as 70 triangular panes. David Shugarts, a guy who wrote 3 books about how the Da Vinci Code is real, tried to disprove this number, but he came away with counting 689 pieces of glass.
Okay.
So even the conspiracy guy didn't land on 666.
Right.
So...
wait, so the real number is 673 and he came away with 689?
Yep. He probably double counted. Some.
Yeah, it's weird to end up with more than what is official.
Well, it's really, if you look at the, just even a picture of the pyramid, it's really easy just to do math.
Yeah.
Like, you can just count them and, just add.
Oh, by using geometry.
Absolutely. You can just do that very,
easily. It's pretty much how you would build one.
Unless there's some hidden paint. It would have to be somewhere combined because all the numbers are over.
It's all made out of glass. How could you hide any?
I don't know.
So they'll never find these glass panes. These ones you can see through.
So the 666 number is based on a mistake that was made in a tourism brochure that was put out while the pyramid was being constructed that did claim that the number of glass panes was 666. Unfortunately, the brochure also claimed that the number of glass panes was 672 at another point. So it's really all over the place. Who really knows? The reason that Alex knows about this is not...
is because an intern was drunk one morning?
Nope. It's not because of misprinted brochure or because François Mitterrand is a well-known Satanist, which he's not, but because of the Da Vinci Code. On page 21 of Dan Brown's fiction novel, Robert Langdon, the Tom Hanks role, says to himself, quote, "This pyramid, at François Mitterrand's explicit demand, has been constructed with exactly 666 panes of glass, a bizarre request that had always been a really hot topic among conspiracy buffs who claimed 666 was the number of Satan. This comes from the Da Vinci Code."
God damn it.
He thinks everything fake is
real. You know what? It makes sense, because we're essentially being run by somebody who thinks that the world is national treasure, so why not?
I wish the world was national treasure.
Probably,
not the second one, though.
Cage's top 10 role.
Oh.
I would say top 10.
Oh.
Top 5.
Oh.
I don't know.
Also, I need to air an apology. That time that I was explaining that movie where the kids end up on another planet.
Yeah.
And I thought it was 2012 I was saying that.
Yeah.
It was knowing. Someone corrected me. I apologize about that. I was deeply ashamed I didn't know that.
I was going to say, I really don't think that they end up on a different planet on 2012.
That was 6 episodes back that we, the correction from that one.
Yep.
So Alex really just hates François Mitterrand because he was the first socialist president of France. And in his time in office, he pushed things quite strongly to the left and made the left a legitimate, workable political force in the country. He pushed for the abolition of the death penalty and supported a 39-hour work week. He welcomed the Communist Party of France into his cabinet, which was super taboo at the time, and he ushered in a very serious rise in the popularity of the French Socialist Party, which interestingly came almost directly at the expense of the Communist Party. Communist Party's numbers went way down, Socialist Party went way up.
Right.
They've gone down since then, but, you know, whatever. The two French presidents after him were both literal criminals. Jacques Chirac was found guilty in 2011 of diverting public funds and abusing public confidence. In March 2018, just very recently, Nicolas Sarkozy was charged with bribery and accepting illegal campaign contributions, stemming from allegations that Muammar Gaddafi gave him 50 million euros for his campaign in exchange for access and favors. Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, said, quote, "We funded it and we have all the details and are ready to reveal everything. The first thing we want is this the first thing we want this clown to do is give the money back to the Libyan people. He was given assistance so that he could help them, but he's disappointed us. Give us our money back." After that, France elected another socialist, Francois Hollande, who has at this point not been arrested. So, of the...
Is he really that much of a socialist.
Yeah, but whatever. You got 4 presidents there. 2 of them are socialists, 2 aren't. The 2 socialists, not in prison.
Two aren't.
Well, to be fair, Jacques Chirac wasn't in prison either. He got a 2-year, amended sentence or whatever.
Man, you get a 50 million euro loan or gift from the Gaddafis and you don't stop and think, I wonder if they have receipts on this?
I wonder if they're going to blackmail me.
That seems so obvious, right?
And that's even like not talking into... Taking
Why
into,
are our leaders so dumb?
Well, that's not even taking into account the other fucked up stuff in Sarkozy's.
They're yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you,
yeah.
You said that Africa had not entered history yet and stuff like that. Like, whoa, dude.
It's coming. It's coming.
Whoa.
When they get there, we'll put them in the books.
He said a lot of really horrible stuff that people deem to be like, dude, you know that mic's on?
Yeah. Well, he's really short, so that doesn't count.
So anyway, I...
He doesn't know. Microphones are always usually held above where his head would be, so he never knows if he's speaking into the microphone or not.
I searched InfoWars. I searched Prison Planet. Yes. I searched the internet high and low, trying to find evidence that Francois Mitterrand screamed at the moon, howled at the moon, yelled at the moon, barked at the moon. Any variation of this, Francois Mitterrand, moon, anything. I can find nothing. I also don't care if he yelled at the moon at some point.
You don't, they don't even have one where he was being sarcastic at the moon?
It's, you're so big up there.
You think you're so great.
Lumiere!
No, I think that counts as yelling at the moon.
Loon. Loon is
moon. Yeah, yeah.
God damn it.
Lumiere is the sun, right?
No, Lumiere.
No, that's just
that's the best character from Beauty and the Beast. The French candlestick.
Yes.
Anyway.
Wait. So here's another question I have for
you. Is it about Beauty and the Beast? Because if it's not, we got to move on.
Why is his name also equivalent to his eventual transformed state? Like, his name is Lumiere, and he gets turned into a candlestick. That seems a little bit on the nose, right?
I would argue that those nicknames came
after. Were they nicknames, though?
I can't imagine his given name is Lumiere.
But that's what I think is going on!
I don't know. I don't think either of us have done enough research to do... Like, that will be our next episode. Go through all the names in Disney movies.
Here's why Beauty and the Beast presaged and predicted the era that we're living in now, all right? What is the witch, but not somebody who... asking our help. Immigrants. What are we but the prince? And we are turned into a beast by our treatment of the ignorance. This makes perfect sense. That is why Trump is elected. Beauty and the Beast is the greatest, most prescient movie of our time, and I don't know where it came from. Must have been an original story that was written in the 90s for Disney. I assume that's correct. Dan?
Lumiere, which translates from French as light, is a man who was turned into a candelabra, featured as a supporting character in 1991's Beauty and the Beast. Lumiere is a servant in the French... Yeah, it looks like his
name is name.
Lumiere. Son of a bitch.
It might as well be like they named the one guy just Clock.
But you don't know if his name isn't just Clock in French.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, the only one that makes sense for me is Chip, because he was... Wait.
He was chipped.
Was Chip... born.
Oh no.
As a teacup?
Oh no.
Chip is not old enough to have been alive at that time.
So we got Miss Potts.
Yeah.
She was the pot.
Again, she got turned into a teapot.
Huh. Yeah, yeah, this is too convenient.
Nominative determinism, my friend.
This is very suspicious.
A lot of people are
the
like-
The clock was named Cogsworth.
Yeah, exactly. There it is. There it is.
All right. This is stupid. We gotta move along.
Yeah, yeah, this needs to...
I unfortunately don't know any German, so I can't, I can't really hot dog on this one, but it turns out that, this also, has to do, the Satanism streak.
Yeah.
Gets into Germany too.
Oh yeah.
And the point is they're obsessed with all this. I mean, look, some of the best evidence is Helmut Schmidt, German Chancellor, not Helmut Kohl, Helmut Schmidt wrote Men and Powers, a political retrospective.
Or
and in there he admits X-Men there's a world government, the Bilderberg Group and Trilateral Commission run it, but where a lot of stuff gets done, he says, is in Northern California at the Bohemian Grove, where he said he loves to travel every year, even before he was the German chancellor. And he says in there that they have their own ritualistic groves in Germany and Austria, but his favorite place to, quote,
like
do the rituals, this is in my Bohemian Grove film, Dark Secrets Inside Bohemian Grove, we show the book, we zoom in on the text. His favorite place to do rituals is Northern California, Mike.
Okay, great. That's very helpful. Those are the instances I was trying to think of. All right.
Absolutely. Hey guys, go ahead and crank it up on air.
Well, you couldn't leave this one.
He plays 2 minutes of Bark at the Moon. Does not comment over it. Is just plays Bark at the Moon. Crazy. Crazy. So what do you know about Helmut Schmidt?
I don't know anything. I know his name, probably does not mean helmet. I know that Schmidt is a very common name. So let's go with his name is Helmut Schmidt. That is what I know about Helmut Schmidt.
Looks like you know a little more German than me. I don't know. So Helmut Schmidt was the Chancellor of the Federal Republic of Germany from 1974 to 1982. In case those dates are confusing, the Federal Republic of Germany was West Germany, also known as non-Soviet Germany.
Oh, yeah, because that was before the Berlin Wall fell.
You bet it was.
Oh.
He was a member of the Social Democratic Party, so another socialist-leaning person that Alex can be mad at. Which is, you know, that's suspicious, kind of, since the Nazis called themselves the National Socialists.
Also, like, in Australia, the Democratic Party is actually the Conservatives. So you can never trust it whenever somebody co-ops the name Socialist or Social Democrat.
That's
true
for the
Nazis. Yeah.
In this case, it's, super not, there's no connection because, Hitler outlawed the Social Democratic Party in 1933, leading to the deaths, imprisonment, and exile of their party leaders. Granted, Schmidt was a member of the Hitler Youth.
Okay.
Although he was thrown out for having anti-Nazi views. So it's kind of it's a roller coaster there.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna go with, I'm neutral on this guy so far.
Yeah, it's
tough. What were his policies?
Well, he wasn't terrible.
Did he talk to any aliens?
I don't know. I can't speak to that.
Now a big part of my support for politicians.
My research did not dig up any of that, but from everything I can read about him, he seemed like kind of a decent guy,
well-meaning dude,
especially towards like the later years of his life. It's really hard to say what you would have done in World War II if you were brought up in Nazi Germany.
No, I think it's pretty easy now. We know exactly what people were doing. We're living in Nazi Germany right now. It's pretty easy.
Well, sure, I guess. But his history is kind of hard to square with us saying like he's a great dude, because he did fight for Nazi Germany in World War II.
Right.
And I really don't have any interest in defending him necessarily for that. He's very easy to attack on those merits, like he was a Nazi, and he was a Mason for sure. Like, yeah. If Alex wants to dance on those things, he could do it. But none of the stuff that's like relative in his history that we would deem problematic, none of that really matches up with any of Alex's complaints.
Yeah.
That he's trying to make. When you look into Helmut Schmidt's connection with Bohemian Grove, you'll inevitably turn up a Washington Post article from 1982 that very clearly lists tons of prominent business and political figures that vacation and congregate there long before Alex, quote, exposed it. Further, it offers this glimpse into what goes on at the Grove, which seems pretty upfront to me. Quote, today's Grove schedule, according to Camp Insiders, has included a lakeside talk by FBI Director William H. Webster, followed by Kissinger's talk, an organ concert, and a stage performance. Saturday offers skeet shooting, a hike to the river, a band concert, and Lojinks review, in which leading politicians and executives often sing and dance and drag.
Right.
So even that sort of aspect of it is all very clear, and it's in the Washington Post in 1982.
Yeah, I don't like how our world leaders go to summer fantasy camp, though. I'm not a fan of that.
You can not be a fan of it, but it's not like...
No, it's not bad. Or, I mean, it's bad, but it's not, like, sinister.
Yeah, exactly.
They just want to skeet shoot and then later on have a weird gay orgy that they're not allowed to have. You know?
It might be bad in terms of the health of the... Like the body
the
politic.
World.
You know, sure.
Yeah.
But it's not the actual activities. It's the secrecy and weirdness.
Yeah. Yeah. And the activities seem very benign.
For the most part. If not just sort of like how John Ronson describes it.
Yeah.
Being like, this is silly.
Yeah.
You guys are adults. What are you guys doing?
Yeah.
And just kind of laughable that people would spend their vacation that way. But, you know, whatever. What we see from Alex over and over again. We go back to that thing about Tony Blair. If he had read the article and actually cited the article that's titled Con Man Attacks Prime Minister, you know, basically Con Man lies about Prime Minister, it takes away a lot of his cachet. So he takes his blurb from that article and pretends that it says a different thing than it does.
Yeah.
It does the same thing with Bohemian Grove. You take this kernel of weirdness that arouses suspicion and takes it out of context, and now it's demons. So, when Alex says the stuff about the he says the stuff about Helmut Schmidt talking about the groves in Germany and how Schmidt's favorite grove was Bohemian, what he's talking about there, what he says there is literally quoting from his own script from his movie, The Dark Secrets of Bohemian Grove. It's okay. Not quoting some like primary source or no. anything like that. He's quoting his own documentary. I didn't have the time or the money to order his book. I didn't have time for this episode to read a 400-page book. But I did find some people who had read it. And what they say, is that they explain that Schmidt did love coming to Bohemian Grove. But the reason given is not because they do the rituals great there. It's because of the curious behavior of people. Like they're wearing polka dot pants instead of suits and stuff like that. They're weird. That's not in line with how West Germans are having fun in the 80s.
That is such the German sense of humor. Is they're like, oh, look, he's wearing crazy pants. Hilarious.
These people are weird. I love it.
No Nazi jokes.
And then he very clearly also makes a point of in the book of how why he loved it there so much was the natural beauty of the forest.
Right.
And stuff like that, which is very easy to understand.
He probably did howl at the moon, though, if he was going to...
He barked at the moon.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Also, another thing that's very important to point out, in the review that I found, the guy who's talking about it says that he doesn't mention doing rituals there.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not positive about that, because I haven't read the text. But I would posit that in the stand-up scene, and like talking to people who are kind of more blowhardy, they'll refer to going to open mics as a ritual.
Really?
I've heard that.
Oh, that sucks.
But I'm sure you've heard people, not necessarily that specific example, but you talk about like going out for a night of drinking, like doing the old ritual or having a shot is the old ritual. There's ways that people use the term ritual that isn't like some sort of satanic ritual.
No.
Some people refer to cooking as a ritual.
Yeah.
You know, there's a ritualistic action to it that...
The Japanese tea ceremony.
Exactly.
That's a ritual.
Exactly. There's hundreds and hundreds of things in life. And so the idea of him being like, if he described it as a ritual going to this vacation spot.
Right.
And also in the Washington Post article, which is really fucked up because it's really just about how Helmut Schmidt likes to vacation. Which is strange. But if you read it, one of the things that he talks about in that article is that when he goes on vacation, he doesn't want to go to places where people are politicking and stuff like that.
Right.
And so that feeds into what the original intent of Bohemian Grove was. Their whole motto back when it was just artists and writers and Bohemian was weaving spiders come not here. The idea that like leave your business outside.
Yeah.
And to some extent,
we're gonna fuck.
Exactly.
So shut up.
No ladies. Only rules.
No women.
No reporters.
We're gonna fuck.
Yeah, exactly. That's the implied third rule of the first two.
Don't swing. Get out of the fuck of here.
No snitch. No snitching. No ladies. So, I mean, all this stuff to me is just like, you've chosen these great, like, kernels of something that you can build fear off of, but a closer analysis of them, like, I would much rather Alex talk about the fact that Helmut Schmidt was a Nazi in World War II.
Right.
Because if he brought that up, then he'd have to talk about his later career. Why was he the Chancellor of West Germany instead of East Germany? Why was he, you know, why did he not have any Nazi inclinations in his later years?
Yeah.
Why did he have a very documented history within the Nazis of being not fully on board.
Right.
It's the same thing with François Mitterrand. Like, if he wanted to talk about François Mitterrand, about how he was part of the Vichy government for a little while, he could do that. But if he talked about that, then he'd have to talk about how that was only for a little while after he was a POW cop captured by the Nazis. He was a part of the Vichy government and then became a rebel against the Vichy government.
Right.
So, like, you'd have to talk about, like, oh, the end result.
There's a lot of nuance and he can't do that.
Exactly. Looking into it, I'm like, man, there's a lot of meat here. I wish he was a good host.
Yeah.
Like, I wish he was a good show because you could do a really interesting deep dive probably into like the politics of Mitterrand.
Yeah, and, that would be interesting.
Have a pretty interesting talk, or even Helmut Schmidt.
You know, that's an interesting question.
We can't
now.
Do that.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Helmut Schmidt being in the Nazi party.
Right. I don't know if he was in the party. But
well,
he was a soldier
in the army.
But
right?
I think that's different.
Could you? I know. I think it's different too. Because would you think in like historically, you know, like 100 years from now, if we still are capable of writing, do you think people who fought in the American army would be considered just as evil as people who fought in the Nazi army? Like, what is the war on Iraq but a concentrated murder, you know?
I think that,
So I mean, we killed how many civilians in Iraq? Like, the tally is close to what, like 30 million, 300 million, something crazy.
I don't know how you have that conversation imagining what the insight of the future will be.
Yeah.
Even though we're far away enough from the beginning of the Iraq war to have a good bit of context and insight. I don't know. I still think you err on the side of,
not Nazi.
Well, no, I think you err on the side of lenience towards the enlisted people.
Yeah.
Partially because, and this is true from classical times till now, a lot of times the people who are enlisted are people who have no choice.
Yeah.
Not because they're forced to be in the army, but because economic circumstances, right. The promise of free college,
yep.
All sorts of things lead people to join up. And then when they're in, you sign a contract that you're going to be in, and if you're in country, it's not like you can be like, guys, can you fly me home?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
You're trapped in a situation where, like, you might die if you don't kill people wrongly.
Right.
Right? You know?
Right.
Like, so I think you err on the side of not being able to fully understand the position that they're in, until you can.
Yeah.
And when you do know, like, officers in the Nazi party.
Right.
People higher up who are like, you fucking knew better.
Right.
Then you can make that claim. And I don't know exactly where the line is, but there is a line.
There is a certain amount of the enlisted man is the gun, not the guy firing it.
Yes.
The guy firing it is the colonel or, fucking Cheney or whomever you want to go with, you know.
The only thing that's wrong with that analogy is that there are some of your metaphorical guns that like to go
exactly
off.
No, I absolutely agree,
but you err on the side, I think, of trust and faith that the individual is not bad.
Yeah,
you hope that, again, until there's evidence of the contrary. Yeah. And from everything I can tell about Helmut Schmidt, he didn't end up like being a Nazi later in life or anything like that.
Right.
It wasn't like he retained his Nazi ideology. It's just tough. It's just tough. When
that'd be weird to be like a super progressive politician, but in secret, you're like, oh, I still hate the Jews.
Yeah.
I'm going to benefit them through policy action.
Right.
I'm going to make sure everybody has health care, but oh, I hate those Jews. Mm-hmm. So weird.
I'm going to become Chancellor of West Germany, running for a party that was outlawed by Hitler.
Yeah.
Killed all the officials. I'm going to join that party. Doesn't make sense for someone who's a Nazi. Anyway, this brings us to the end of our Alex is stupid about spiritualist stuff chunk.
Right.
That was really fun for me looking up that stuff.
I believe you.
It's also just fun to say François Mitterrand.
Oh, Mitterrand.
Très bien.
Ah.
So, where we last left off.
Uh-huh.
Like, I can't tell you how crazy this is. Like, he plays Bark at the Moon after this caller, right?
Yeah.
So he's talking to this caller and he's like,
does he play it again?
No, he's like, hey, turn that up. And so they play Bark at the Moon.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And it plays for like a minute and then it just abruptly goes to break. And it's just like, it goes from the feed cut off to, hey, you need seeds? Like, it just goes to a commercial. Like, Alex doesn't even throw it to commercial. It's just Bark at the Moon until commercial. And then it comes back.
Wait.
After commercial.
So the commercial is playing, but in the background, like, Alex's show, they cut to commercial, but Alex's broadcast, they were playing it the whole time.
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No. They broadcast the commercials, and then after the commercials, they come back with Bark at the Moon.
Okay.
But it's impossible it was playing the whole time. It's not long
enough. It's not long enough. Okay.
No. So
I was really hoping that it was just playing the whole time, and they just let it ride.
Nope. He restarts it, and we come back from commercial break.
Old Tony Blair and the rest of them worship the devil, but then people see things like Ozzy Osbourne, it all turns into a big joke, and they love to claim they rise from the dead. They love to claim that they live forever. They love to try to duplicate what Christ did, but it's all a counterfeit and a fraud. No, you only live one life, and all you Satanists are going to die. Your bodies are going to fail, and you will be judged.
Hey, Alex, what's baptism?
Boy, well, I'll tell you right now, it's not a ritual, because rituals are evil.
What is the ritual of baptism? What is it?
I don't like you using that word.
What does it represent?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Does it represent rebirth?
Dan, it is a literal dunking and undunking of a person into water.
It.
And that is it. It has no greater meaning. It's definitely not a ritual of any kind. Nobody does rituals in the Christian faith. There are no rituals. I'll tell you right now,
hey,
when
Alex,
you eat that
communion?
Fucking cracker, that's a goddamn cracker. When you drink that wine, you know what? It's not even wine anymore. It's fucking grape juice.
It's blood.
Mm.
Blood.
Mm.
Blood.
Well, look, I'm an enemy of the Catholic Church, okay?
That's fair.
I don't believe in transubstantiation.
That's fair. So that's stupid. Now let's move along to something else that's stupid. Alex is now going to jump in and give a prediction about the dire economic straits that the world was in.
And then he plays some Dire Straits.
Yeah. I wish.
And it's all part of just the bad attitude, the twisted mindset, the loser mindset that poisons and permeates so many layers of society. So let's get focused and be men and women out there and realize we got the fight of our lives ahead. This depression is going to get worse and worse and worse. And
it didn't.
And riots are going
to
break out in many areas, and society is going to degenerate, and the globalists are going to try to use that crisis to bring in a hardcore, perfected tyranny that makes Stalinist Russia and Nazi Germany look tame in comparison. And I'm not just saying that. I mean that.
Okay.
So get your head screwed on in the right direction.
Okay. All right. So Alex's prediction about the financial situation, as we know now from being in the present, is flawed. Stupid. He's
slightly.
Wrong.
Slightly.
He's wrong. He's just trying to sell gold.
A bit.
But it turns out his thoughts are also really terrible.
The Congress has an 11% approval rating. The only person that has a high approval rating is Barack Obama because he's seen as an outsider because of the color of his skin. It's a branding bait and switch. It's a very cruel hoax that the establishment has played. I mean, if we had the will...
That's not great. I don't like the sound of that.
The only reason people like that president is because he's black. Moving on. Bait and switch.
I love how Alex says stuff like, hey, you know, if you're against Obamacare, they say you're racist. I'm like, no, you said things like that.
Yeah.
You said things like that. Like, oh, they only think he's an outsider and like him because of the color of his skin. Like, that's invalidating everything that Obama did. That's invalidating every other reason the people liked him. Like, it's crazy.
I can't think of any other reason.
He takes all of the projections that people have of positive feelings and puts it like, nah, he's just black. You like him because he's black.
Yeah.
That's profoundly racist.
Yeah. But that's, well, I mean, in a certain way, he is making a perfect straw man argument. They say you're racist if you don't like Obama's policies is the best straw man argument you could possibly make.
No, because it's great.
It's fantastic.
It's a great way to cover, not engaging with Obama's politics and also racism.
Yeah.
It's a good way to cover both of
those. You get to dodge both.
Yeah, it's cool.
Oh, it's good stuff.
It's real cool.
People say you're racist for this, and the part of the sentence that he mutters under his breath is, when they should be saying I'm racist for this.
Right.
Cut that out. Cut that out.
No one has any clips of me being racist. So in this next clip, this is the last one from February 17th. We continue Alex's really stupid brain saying really stupid things.
I mean, if we had the will to actually go up against the military, we would trash them from one end to the other. We're not Iraqis who historically aren't the best shots field. I don't want that. I don't have some cojones need to, I can't wait to get a shooting war going. But just like The Patriot, which is based on a composite of true stories and real things that happen, burning folks up in churches, you know, all of it. The government's going
to
kill people's children. They're going to kill the wrong people's children.
Who's that?
Okay. And then people are just going to go off. And then the feds are going to go into bunker mentality and the local police, you're not going to see them on the road. This is cowardice. The New World Order's people are cowards. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, I do. I want to comment on your belief that you could beat the military.
The wrong people's children.
Yeah, that's a coded phrase
there. The wrong people. They're going to hit. I mean, you have no idea how awful this thing is that I'm predicting. They're going to hurt your children. And I know you're saying to yourself, but wait, I'm white.
Right. This goes back to that revelation that I had much too delayed that all of his fears are they're going to do the thing I'm afraid of to white people.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he's saying.
That's
there.
Literally
the
exactly
wrong
what he's
people's
saying.
Children is what that's the coded message he's giving to his audience. It's crazy.
Yeah. But that is an unfortunate thing though that, he thinks we can go up against the military.
That's crazy.
The literally strongest fighting force in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Capable of traversing the entire world anytime in a very short period.
The other thing I want to drop in here real quick. I was having a little conversation the other day about how, like, why doesn't Alex advocate violence? You know, like, it doesn't make sense.
Well, I mean, he has... Whenever he's
indicative,
been too drunk.
Well, but then he mumbles politically.
Yeah,
something like that. But he, there's no reason for him not to. If he really believes the things that he says.
Oh, yeah.
Violence is the answer.
Yeah.
There's no,
like, if you believe that abortion is murder, then the only option is violence against
these
people.
I'm not even talking about that. He thinks they're demons.
Right.
Running the world.
Right.
And somehow you having a radio show is going to stop these demons.
Literal demons.
That have supernatural powers.
Right.
And shit like that.
They also smell like sulfur.
The only answer is kill these people. Right? I mean, that's crazy to me.
Well, they're not human. So they don't get the same protections, right?
You need silver bullets.
Yeah. Well, that's the way you defeat our military. I don't know if you knew that or not. That's the only way to defeat the United States military.
I don't know if you know this.
What?
Ted Anderson has a new supply of silver bullets that are for sale. Very exciting shipment just came in at Midas Resources.
You have to howl at the moon first, though, of course.
It just doesn't fucking make sense to me. Like, I was really wrestling with this. Like, if one believed the things that Alex believes, literally there's no reason for restraint. There's your life is worthless.
Yeah.
Your life is meaningless if there are demons running the world.
Yeah.
And they're about to consolidate power and create a perfect tyranny dystopia.
Right.
The only answer is make terrorist cells. Make militias that will then become super violent. That's the only, like, logical outcome of this. It's not an information war. You can't have an information war against the shoot devil.
Yeah.
The literal devil does not care if you're lying about him.
Yes.
It doesn't matter.
True. But, I mean, there's a difference between things that you say you believe and things that you actually believe. Like,
right.
I genuinely believe that climate change is going to fucking wreck the world in a lot shorter period of time. Like, within the next 15 to 20 years.
But you also know that killing a scientist isn't going to do anything.
No, but what I'm saying is, based on that belief, I should be doing more to prepare.
Right.
But I'm not really doing that.
That's not the same thing.
Don't actually believe it.
That's
do you know what
true.
I'm saying?
That's not true. I don't believe that at all. I think you're resigned to some extent.
All right. That's a good point.
But that's not the same
that's
thing.
That's a fair point.
Like, the you not getting water or living somewhere that's safe from flooding and
is because
sandbags.
My plan is to kill myself whenever it gets bad
exactly,
enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Me too. That's why we don't have food in the home.
And what would you do in a zombie apocalypse? Fucking blow my brains out. What are you talking about?
And we're broke. You know, there's and I don't live for that. You know,
I can't afford a gun now. What do you mean in the post-apocalypse I'm going to be able to afford one?
I don't particularly live for the excitement of post-apocalyptic scenarios.
Yeah, not really my thing.
It's not I like podcasting.
I like indoor plumbing a lot.
So good.
So good.
So no, that is not the same thing at all. I think that your firmly held beliefs are rational in terms of the climate change stuff. And it's further rational to know that any lashing out against some human is not going to do anything in order to help the goal that you're looking for.
Right, right, right.
Whereas in terms of Alex, with his rhetoric that he puts forth, like, I don't know. I mean, he's not alive anymore, but like Zbigniew Brzezinski is a monster. He's a demon who's controlling world politics. If you kill him, then he can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So like there are rational justifications based on Alex's rhetoric for violence. And the only explanation to be like, don't do this is because he knows he's full of shit and because he knows that he will be arrested.
Yeah.
If people do that.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't literally. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're done with the 17th. Now, 17th has come and gone.
Yeah.
And now we go to the 18th, and Alex comes back with a bold claim and an absolute lie.
Okay. So we're playing two truths and a lie.
And all the real money men, they took all the money out. We got word of this year before it imploded and said Enron's a money laundering operation, a narcotics operation. It's going to implode. And then they grabbed Ken Lay, and then he had a heart attack right before he was about to go to prison.
Heart attack.
And I've got confirmed sources. That guy is still alive. He's down in Paraguay right now.
All right. So Ken Lay is in Paraguay.
I did not know Ken Lay was in Paraguay.
Didn't know he faked his death?
There's a limerick there.
It is, yeah. There once was a Lay in Paraguay who had... I don't know how to make a limerick on the fly.
My friend did not have much to say. He went down there, he lost all his hair, and now I hope he gets his day.
Flayed. I hope he ends up on Showdown with Bobby Flay. Has a miserable time trying to throw down with Bobby Flay, not Showdown.
It is not okay to make jokes that are gay.
That's not a limerick.
No.
So, no, Kenneth Lay did not fake his death. But the reason that people think that is really because he's such a con man that
yeah.
it's really unsatisfying that he didn't cheat death.
Yeah.
That's sort of like one of these things that's like, you want a better end to the story than
right.
he had a heart attack right before
right.
Going to prison. Because you also want him to be punished for what he did. It's just, it's unsatisfying on every end. But in his autopsy,
America, there is a sort of con man as folk hero kind of situation where you want him to get away that last time. You
somewhat,
know?
Maybe. No, you don't.
No, of course. But if you're doing the con man as folk hero, he's gotta have that last trick up his sleeve.
So Tom
and
Sawyer
then he,
it.
And then he retires, you
right.
know?
The thing is, in his autopsy, they found that he had evidence of a prior heart attack that had been unreported. So his heart condition was bad to begin with.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with, Francois Mitterrand. When he left office, he ended up dying pretty shortly after
yeah.
from a cancer that he successfully hid, while he was in power because he didn't want it to be a part of anything.
Of course.
In terms of, like, public affairs and stuff like that. Which actually I think is really cool. I think that's great of him. Very selfless.
That's tough to do. I don't think you could pull that off now.
No, you probably could in the 80s, but not now. Ken Lay did not fake his death. And further, Alex did not report a year before that Enron was a narcotics money laundering operation.
Also, they weren't either of those, right? They were just evil. Like, they were just a money moving scam.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, they had a wing. I wouldn't be surprised if
in the old brick and mortar, there's a big money laundering wing.
Or they had some junior exec who was in narcotics.
or they were so incompetent that they were just putting money into laundering machines. They were one of the more corrupt things in the history of American business.
There are a few things you could tell me about them that's negative, and Connie, that I would be like, absolutely not.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
That's true.
So I'll go ahead and give him, you know what, based on nothing, I'll be like, all right, you can say that it's a narcotics and money laundering
yeah.
operation. Not gonna even care.
Yeah.
Take it. I will stipulate that for your argument.
Right.
But what I won't allow is you to pretend that you reported it a year before.
All right. I don't know if Hitler kicked dogs, but judging by his track record, I'll let you say he kicked dogs. Why not?
Let's stipulate he's a dog kicker.
Yeah, he's already got a lot of crimes on his plate. We don't need to worry about adding too
so
many more.
That's the other sort of argument hack that I'd like to give to people, along with being able to just say, I reject your premise. We
yeah.
don't need to talk about
yeah.
this. The other one is, fine, we'll stipulate that. Let's move on. Like, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to get into an argument about whether or not Enron did narcotics. They might have. I don't know. I don't give a shit. Doesn't
accepted.
Affect my opinion either way.
Accepted.
Yeah.
We'll put it on the board.
Yeah.
But that's one strike in a many strike column.
Yeah.
So sure.
Right. It's just like, yeah, yes, pointless piece of information. Let's pretend it's true.
Sure.
I use that trick so often with Alex. Just like so often I'm listening to it and I'm like, cool. I can't do a 7-hour episode about this, about the times you've lied. I'm going to pretend you're not lying this time. Let's move along. So earlier, in the last episode, Alex, made a claim about, people only like Barack Obama because he is, black.
And I don't think anybody really perceived him as an outsider, right?
I think that some people thought.
Well,
about
there was a certain amount of like he came up from community organizing
yeah.
and that kind of thing, I suppose.
And I also think that there is a fair amount of outsiderness to him, and not just based on his skin color.
Yeah,
I think that's absurd.
And his relative lack of public
experience. Entrenchment. Years in government.
Yeah, he was a state senator and then a senator and then the president, but there wasn't really like a long track record of.
He's sort of an inside outsider.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
outside
yeah, yeah.
insider.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, like whatever version of it you want.
Right.
Yeah. If you want to say that he's I don't think anyone was making the argument that he's some sort of a rogue who's going to come in who has nothing to do with government.
Right.
Alex
right.
would like to pretend that that's what the left believed.
Right.
I don't think people did.
Right.
I think that everyone had a pretty even handle on it, that he's in the system, but he's also,
right.
He's certainly embodying fresher ideas.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you think, you know, Bernie Sanders, you think of him as like he's like an outsider, but he's held public office for like 40 years. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know.
He's a consummate insider,
yeah.
but also someone who seems to not care about being an insider.
Yeah.
And so he's not an insider in the same way that like a Paul Ryan is.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, Anyway, who gives a shit?
Kowtow toady little bitch.
Anyway, Alex says some more bad stuff about Obama here in this next clip.
Obama isn't going to have any lobbyists in there. You watch, Alex. Just give the guy a chance. Just give the guy a chance.
Also, he's right on that one.
Sure.
Going to give him that one.
Yeah.
That one goes up on the board.
Oh, no. No, absolutely. But yeah. You're going to have to chalk up every president for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Including Trump. So
yeah.
It's sort of a weak argument. Yeah, we would love people to stand by their promises to not have any lobbyists around. Probably not going to happen unless you get money out of politics.
We're getting closer with a lot of these democratic socialists. They're doing a good job not taking dark money.
Right, but once they get in, they're going to have to enact rules that make it so other
exactly.
people can't do yeah. that, because otherwise they'll just get voted out next cycle
right.
or whatever, whenever
right,
someone
right.
comes in with mammoth amounts of money against
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
And I'm going, he's already appointing them. He's already saying who he's going to appoint before he's even sworn in. Just give him a chance, you racist. It's you out there saying that to the racist. I'm sick of all this race stuff. I'm so
yes,
sick of it, it makes
are.
My head spin. People, the ones saying that, the ones with the chip on the shoulders, most of them are white yuppies who are in this guilt religion. And anybody that didn't fall down and worship Barack Obama, who, by the way, is Arab. He's Arab. I'm not bashing Arabs. My point is, the
yes,
guy's...
Yes, you are!
10% African. So we've got our first Arab president.
Sure.
Fine. Point is, the new Arab president's a liar.
Sure.
Yeah, his daddy's was 80% North African.
You know, from Arabia.
Muslim. Arab.
Same thing. Sure. Sure. First Arab president, Dan. The also, one whose dad is from North Africa.
Also, in 2009, I'm not sure what dad he's talking about, you know, because he's had different...
Oh, that's a good point.
Because there's Frank Marshall Davis.
He's thrown around a lot of fake dads.
There's Barack Obama Sr. There's a bunch of other... There's a bunch of options for dad.
So then he's accidentally saying that Obama's dad is his dad.
I don't know what he's saying. But I do know that when he says his daddy, that does not... That's coded.
Yeah.
That's not something he would say about Paul Ryan. His daddy...
Yeah.
Is part Swedish or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He would never say that about a white person. That's so
No, of course he does. He says that about a white president all the time.
Trump's daddy.
You know, like Trump's daddy was a member of the KKK. Trump's daddy was a member of the Nazi party, you know.
Trump's daddy and his daddy's daddy are both really into eugenics.
Yeah, weird.
And so is Trump.
Yep.
So dude, that's Race. Just, I mean, I don't care to comment on that past just the playing of it.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Yeah.
And whenever you get into like percentages of people to score points, that usually means you care.
Yeah.
And I don't, it's hard for me to hear that and listen to someone say, I'm not being racist. You know, it's hard for me to hear someone talk about percentages and be like, oh yeah, you're real chill. You're real cool.
Well, it's impossible for somebody to say, I'm not bashing Arabs, but there you have it. You have your first Arab president.
Who's a liar.
Who's a liar, right. Like all Arabs are. But I'm not bashing Arabs.
Muslims.
Arabs. Arabs. Same thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you get 23andMe back and you want to tell me percentages, that's not racist. That's just kind of fun. But anyone else telling me percentages? Probably going to be suspicious. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You digging me?
I've never asked and I don't care.
What do you
I
mean?
Don't care about what percentages I am. I just don't care. Who cares? I don't understand caring about it.
So, this next clip, we get to a guest, but this is not the crazy guest.
Okay.
This is a guest we've seen before.
I was going to say, you were teasing that crazy guest real hard, and I'm not seeing him.
I fucking hope it pays off.
Okay.
It's at the end of the episode. It's the last thing we're going to end up talking about for the most part. But, this is a guy named Glenn Spencer. He showed up before. He's a guy who, is really against immigration.
Who would have guessed?
He's very angry.
On Alex's show?
Yep. He's a guy who's set up shop down by the border, and he flies drones trying to take pictures of people crossing the border, and then sends them to, authorities, and then they do nothing with that information.
What an
how could
asshole.
You?
Right. What an asshole.
Yep.
That's just an asshole move.
Oh.
That's not even like a dick move.
He's a big old asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's, we talked about him in depth on a past episode, so we don't need to get into his whole bio. I'd love to be able to tell you which episode that was.
Yeah.
No idea.
But I think it was titled Glenser?
No. He is a Glenser on the population, though.
Yeah.
So one thing that's really interesting is to take these people And you realize that they're nothing without someone like Alex.
Yeah.
Like, they are doing their weirdo thing where they've, like, remote-controlled drones around to try and harass refugees and immigrants. But without Alex, they don't have any real market penetration, and it becomes very clear in this clip.
Yeah, because the people around them, look, even if you agree with, like, illegals are coming into our country, you're still going to be like, the guy who's flying drones is an asshole.
He might feel it too much.
Yeah.
So without Alex, they're nothing. Listen to this.
Now look at my site. I had 75 people online. Now I got 217. You have a popular show.
Well, you'll get a lot more than that. We have millions of listeners. Great folks.
You sure do. Wow.
So multiple times.
He went from 70 people to 200 on the internet. Have you ever heard of 200 people following you?
Well, no, it's people who are on his website. I guess he's looking at the live analytics or something like that.
Okay.
So like 130 people from Alex's show have checked over. That's the presumption he's making.
Yeah.
And Alex there is also begrudgingly like, you'll get a lot more than that. We have a lot of listeners. Don't try and say we have 100 listeners.
Don't tell people.
Don't
that,
use specific numbers.
Don't tell people that it was only 130.
You fucking asshole.
Come on. I know you think it's exciting that you tripled your audience, but that's four guys.
Act like you've been there, Spencer.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy because like, it's revealing the limited grasp of Alex's, reach, because so many times I've tracked like, things he's promoted, like GoFundMes and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, they got $35 in 9 hours. Interesting.
Mm.
You know, like there's that. He doesn't really have as much of a galvanized active audience as he presents. But people like Glenn Spencer have nobody. And so they see this jump from Alex and they're like, fuck yes. Three times throughout this interview, he's like, you got a big audience. And it's not like the normal buttering Alex up and flattering him.
No.
It's very hasty.
It's genuine excitement.
It's almost surprise that like, oh, I'm talking to you. You have people who will actually do things, which I think is almost cute if it wasn't a border racist.
It is kind of cute.
Yeah. On a human level, it's kind of like, oh, shucks. So he talks about.
Well, I have 200 followers on Twitter. I don't even know 200 people in my life.
Boy, howdy.
Ah.
So I don't want to talk too much about what they're, I don't care. They have an interview mostly about how they're lying about building a border fence and stuff like that.
That's
mostly what the meat of the interview is about. But I think other things that come up are much more important, like this, where Glenn Spencer accidentally shows too many cards about what his actual game is.
And I can't get arrested. We've been flying the border for over 2 years and posting our results and challenging the DHS. I held a press conference in the National Press Club on January 15th. Spent almost $10,000 setting this all up. You know how many people showed up in the media? Nobody.
Fuck you, asshole!
Yeah.
Suck it!
You rented out the press club and no one came.
Yay!
Who cares?
Go fuck yourself.
But also, like, what he said there at the beginning, I can't get arrested. It's because he's trying to get punished. All of these people are trying to get punished to validate their victim status.
Oh, he's trying to get arrested.
Well,
I thought he was trying to get arrests.
I don't think...
Like, I thought that's what he meant, where it's like, I've been giving out all of this information, and they're not actioning on it.
No,
that kind of thing.
I think he's talking about agitating and flying around the border and, like, proving them wrong and coming at them, and no one will arrest him for whatever.
Okay, sure.
For his activities.
Sure, that makes as much sense as anything else.
From the context from listening to the episode, what I took away from it, although I would say that you're from his last interview and what he's about big picture, I can't get arrests also makes sense.
Yeah.
I think what he's talking about is no one will fuck with me.
Right.
I keep trying to fuck with them in order to get a response out of them to validate my fucking with them, and no one will fuck with me. Everyone just keeps ignoring me.
Ah.
I think that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
That's what I took from more of the context clues.
Well, that does make more sense in the context of him being like, well, now 300 people, 200 people are listening to me.
Well, and it's the same thing with on our last episode from the present day, where you had that Logan Robertson preacher who decided to not challenge his own deportation.
Yeah.
Because he loves the idea of being attacked.
Yeah.
All of these people desperately need to be attacked or else they have nothing.
Right.
And I know it's the wrong thing to say, like, you got Proud Boys coming out or, like, you got fascists marching, go give them a hug.
Yeah.
I'm not fucking saying that. But if everyone did, they'd be screwed. I'm not, I don't think you should do that.
There are many other ways to screw them that would be far more satisfying.
No, totally. And I don't think the reality of the world, lends itself to a point, especially now, where, it's in any way reasonable to not respond to people's rhetoric and their actions.
It's time.
But in a perfect world, you could just end up being like, eh, you do you.
Yeah.
You do you. Whatever.
Like in the Blues Brothers world of, the cops protecting the Nazis, and everybody's just kind of like, everybody's yelling at them and everybody else is like, fucking, come on, Nazis. What are you guys doing?
In a perfect world, all of this could be destroyed by everyone just being like, yeah, isn't that cute? But the problem is, it's never just words. And it's never just rhetoric.
Oh, you guys are racist. Ha ha ha. Go fuck yourselves.
Yep. The problem is that other people, people get hurt. As you hug Nazis, other people get hurt.
In Charlottesville, they're driving cars into you.
Oh, man. So. Can't wait for that next Unite the Right rally.
Yeah,
it's going to be
kidding.
Hot.
Yeah.
It's going to be like 10 people there. Ooh. That's my prediction. It's gonna
still
be,
want to light them on fire.
It's
going to
be Boston all over again.
Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah. So, look, I think that this Glenn Spencer is presenting himself as a very desperate, thirsty fuck so far in this episode. And it would be, like, if that was it, I would have just ignored this.
Yeah.
I would have been like, fuck this. It's a waste of a guest. Who cares? But then they get into this, and this is like, this is just gross.
And if there is a complete upheaval in Mexico, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was being orchestrated by their government, then they're going to push millions of people across the border. And we down here are going to be in a world of trouble. A lot of people. But that's not going to stop here. It's going to come north. And you've got a lot of very vicious people who wouldn't think twice about blowing your head off.
Well, that's the other issue, is that they can use any name they want. The Mexican consulates will give them as many fake IDs as they want. Then the U.S. government accepts that for welfare. I mean, this, literally every criminal that lives in Mexico is on their way here.
I can't even fathom the number of lies and racist images that were just spelled out there. I mean, the biggest crazy one is the Mexican consulate will just give out as many fake IDs as you want. Like, you're some guy who lives in Mexico. You wander the consulate. They're like, I want 7 fake IDs. Give me 7 different names.
Sir, it's only 2 at a time. Unless you have somebody else with a fake ID on them already.
And then 3.
And then you can get another one.
Yeah.
It's you can only double fist beers.
Or
here,
if you have a coupon.
Sir. It is not 10-cent ID night. All right.
That's crazy.
Or if you have a coupon.
That's crazy, man. The level that Alex, like, spreads this distrust of, like, all these other countries that aren't America, their governments are all, kooky backwards land, as if they aren't also governments.
What I don't.
Like, if Mexico and their consulates behaved that way.
Yeah.
There's no way they would be a country right now.
Right.
There's no way that, like, Mexico City is one of the biggest cities in the fucking world.
Yeah.
It's not like, it is not a hovel. It's not like some sort, like, we have, Alex is trying to present this image that, like, all Mexico is burning. Basically, and it's not.
They all live in huts. Like, what are you talking about?
Right, you go from your hut to the consulate, which is just a bigger hut.
Yeah.
And then there's a guy with
it's a hut with 2 rooms.
And one of the rooms has an ID machine in it, and they just make you up 100 IDs. You can cross the
border. But the machine is made out of straw.
Across the border, and then you get all the welfare you want, which is also the next lie, which is complete bullshit. You can't get welfare.
Which
for 5
we've documented
years if you immigrate legally.
Yeah.
If you come illegally, you can't at all. Then the next lie is, well, I mean, it's more just the fear that Glenn Spencer is putting forth, that, like, they won't think to blow your fucking head off. And hey, it's not just down here. They're coming north.
Again.
You Midwestern whites get scared now.
Yeah.
Because later it's going to be too late. There's vicious people who are coming to blow your head off.
What bothers me.
It's crazy.
Forever about these people, especially that. Even if what he's saying is true, right? The government is orchestrating it. So these people hate living in Mexico and make them leave, right?
Right.
Like they're causing unrest.
That is part of his theory.
Yeah. Right? So. That means the people who are leaving are trying to escape from unrest and go to a place. They're not trying to cause unrest or be part of it. They're escaping from it. You are not getting the people who are trying to murder people. You're getting people who are fucked over and they're trying to escape. Oh, we can't accept Syrian refugees. They're being murdered. They're not running away from their homes because they're trying to fuck up somebody else's home. They're running away from their homes because their home is now a pile of rubble because their government is murdering them. We should accept people who are escaping from murderous governments.
Generally speaking, the people who like doing the murdering and all that, when murdering becomes in vogue,
they love sticking around because they get to still murder.
Or they create like a gang and get like a segment of town that's now their property.
Yeah, exactly.
When shit gets illegal, criminals go pro. You know, like that's...
Right.
They don't generally flee.
Why would they come to America? It's harder to commit the murders you want to commit here.
Right.
Stick where it's cool to commit all your murders.
So that's a failing of their logic.
Yeah.
But again, it doesn't matter. It's all about cruelty. It's not about logic.
Yeah, it is about cruelty.
Anyway. Now,
and who better to be cruel to than people who have nowhere else to turn?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like the shooting fish in a barrel of cruelty.
Yeah.
And that's what these losers do all the time.
Yeah.
So goodbye, Glenn Spencer. I hope you don't come back. I know you're dead now, and I don't feel bad about it.
Nope.
In this next clip, Alex is stupid.
Every video game, every TV show, you know, SpongeBob, everything now, it's Enviro Cops. It's, you know, go out and kill CO2 monsters. It's just total brainwashing. You cannot let your children watch TV or go to public school or they will be taken away from you psychologically or maybe physically.
Wow. Don't go to school. Don't watch TV or your kids are gone.
Don't engage with the outside world at all. Just listen to my show.
Also, there's some, like one of the Super Nintendo games I really liked was Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
I remember that one.
I think there were some toxic waste monsters in that. I don't think this is anything new.
No.
Like, I don't think this is
that. Well, then again, we've known about climate change since the 70s, so. Or at least ExxonMobil has, hey, everybody, we're doing great.
Hey,
capitalism is a great system.
Yeah, so that's a lot of, that sort of fear is so scary to me. The idea of like, you can't trust anything.
Anyone. Your family, they don't respect you. The TV, it's lying to you. If you go to school, they're going to take your kids away.
And they're going to indoctrinate them.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're going to come home to you saying words like diversity. Diversity, Dan. Do you even know what that word means?
White genocide.
It has two meanings.
White genocide.
And we cannot have words that have more than one meaning. That's the one truth of the post, inclusive world?
I guess.
Yeah.
So in this next clip, Alex makes a bold, scary claim. And it's something he said before, but I didn't properly explain it the last time he did. But now I can.
Now they've militarized the police. They've shut up Northcom and they have taken over. Congress was threatened with martial law if they didn't pass the banker bailout bill.
I don't think that's just the thing though. It's not because there's always people. People are always going to be the problem. That's when population control is going to come into play. And I haven't heard you talk too much on that.
Really? I'm covering up population control? I didn't know that.
No, they want to kill most of us, if not all of us.
I didn't know that.
I'm actually covering that up.
Are you really a listener? You haven't heard me talk about that every hour, every day?
Nice. That's a fair point, Alex.
Nice, Alex.
That caller's an idiot.
Yeah.
That caller's a straight-up idiot.
I'm on Alex's side on here. I don't like being on Alex's side, but I'm gonna give it to him this time.
This takes him into a very weird mood. I kept that last part in because it's always fun when there's a real rank idiot.
Yeah.
But
it's a weird mood because he just realized that even his listeners don't listen to him.
Well, that's a late motif of his show where you have just like, frustration with the audience where you assume that they're either like fucking with you or they're working for the globalists.
Right.
It's just like, no, you've trained a dumb audience.
Yeah.
You've created non-critical thinkers. And, the thing that I wanted to point out though is this, martial law in Congress. It came up before and I was like, this is fucking stupid. I don't know what he's talking about. And I looked into it more after the fact because I was very curious about it. And what I was able to find out is a very clear explanation of this. In Congress, martial law does not mean the same thing as martial law when Alex talks about it. He knows this.
It means they let Thurgood Marshall run things for a while.
That would be fun.
That would be a fun martial law.
Different spelling of martial law.
That would have been a great TV show while he was a Supreme Court Justice.
But Alex knows better, and he's acting super irresponsibly whenever he, on his show where he talks about the fear of martial law, saying Congress is under martial law that's a huge lie by omission, not explaining what that means. So there's a process that happens not so infrequently in Congress called martial law. As described by The Hill, quote, "The use of martial law refers to bypassing the typical procedure that requires the House to wait a day after the Rules Committee produces a rule establishing floor debate parameters before voting. It's often enacted when there's a congressional break that's imminent and legislation is time sensitive, so congresspeople don't miss their vacations. It's a very regular thing that happens quite a bit. In September 2015, the House invoked martial law twice in that same month in an attempt to avert a government shutdown over a spending bill. In March 2017, martial law was invoked by the GOP, hoping to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. That one was less about vacation and more about the fact that if they didn't force a vote where the reps didn't have a chance to read the legislation, they'd likely not improve from where they were initially with 32 no votes on the Republican side of the aisle. Martial law is a procedure in the House and in the Senate that is done from time to time for strategic reasons. It just has the same name as Alex Jones's biggest fear."
I did not know that.
I didn't know it until I looked into it either.
That's really interesting.
I would have named it different if it were up to me.
Why do people always name things badly?
Because Alex Jones can say that Congress is threatened with martial law, and it sounds like then there's going to be armed guards
everywhere
putting a gun to the head of all the senators and stuff like that. That's the image that comes up in your head, or just sort of like, you know, whatever, dictatorial control over the Senate. And in reality, it's just people trying to be like, "We're not going to wait to vote on this."
See, this is another situation where words can mean two different things at the same time, and this blows their fucking minds.
It's interesting that the one abusing it in this case is him. Seems to be all the times they complain about some X, Y, or Z thing, the person on the wrong side of it is them.
Yeah.
So I don't sit here and pretend to say that the Democrats or the left hasn't misused the idea of martial law in Congress in the past. Of course they fucking have.
Yeah.
Everybody has. And I think it's even abusing it to say, you know, like, we want to go on vacation, but this bill's got to pass. Let's push it.
Yeah.
Like, that sort of thing. But that is what martial law in the House and in the Senate means.
Gotcha.
It's abusive that Alex is using it as some sort of a buzzword on his show. He needs to explain every time what it means. Because martial law is such a piece of the property that he's staked out.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a part of the paranoia and the propaganda that he puts out. He's made multiple documentaries about martial law being on the streets and stuff like that, to the point where anytime he brings it up on the show, it's code. The audience knows what he's talking about from police state documentaries like that. So to me, this is one of the most unfair things he does. It's so abusive to his audience.
Yeah, I just dismissed it out of hand because that's stupid, the idea that Congress was threatened with martial law. Now I know it's actually a thing, I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's fine.
Yeah, I think the first time we went over it when he brought it up, that's our take on it was we were operating
fuck off.
Were operating off believing like he was talking about martial law as opposed to the House rule.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Man, you guys, we got to get better at naming shit.
Yeah.
Conspiracy theorists are always, we're just making it too easy. Make them work hard for it.
Yeah, they're able to just do a layup.
Yeah, so, don't call your fucking telescope the Lucifer. God damn it, guys.
Again, I understand that. That's just good fun.
It is good fun, but you just gotta think for 2 seconds like, oh, people are gonna be stupid about this. Cause guess what? People are fucking stupid.
That's the problem people have that like, when you don't have ill will and you're just trying to live your life, it seems unnecessary to war games things.
Yeah.
That's true. What are crazy people going to think if I do this?
Yeah.
You know, it's not, it's not a fun way to go about your life.
And
constantly playing defense against crazies.
And, you know, at the same time, there's no way to plan for irrational actors if you're a rational person.
It's true.
So it doesn't matter what you do. They're going to be crazy no matter what.
One of the failings of game theory.
Yeah.
One of the failings of Alex.
Nice transition.
Thanks. Is that his listeners are stupid, as evidenced by that last caller, where this next clip is going to start up where he's lashing out at that last caller.
Yeah.
And Alex reveals something that is incredibly fucked up.
You know, I only got about 3 hours sleep, and I'm four less, and I got home last night. I went to bed right at 10,
And then somebody comes knocking on the door wanting to talk to Alex Jones. Don't come to my house, anybody.
Come and knock on my door.
When I'm there with my family or I'm sleeping. And then that was upsetting, and I had trouble getting to sleep. And I am literally dizzy right now with fatigue. When I work this much for several months straight, my vision starts getting blurred. I'm working so hard that my vision blurs sometimes. And then you call me, you lazy little creature, and you tell me I'm not doing enough.
I think he needs a nap. Alex needs a nap.
Oh, Alex, are you a little cranky?
See,
Alex is a little cranky.
But at the same time, he's responding to that caller who's like, you never bring up population control, which is fair. Yell at that guy.
Yeah.
Tee off, Alex. Enjoy. I don't mind him yelling at that dude. But it's super fucked up that he's like, I didn't sleep the night before because I was on coast to coast. And then I tried to go to bed and some fucking listener showed up at my house. Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
That is really, really fucked up.
Yeah, you should not show up at anybody's house.
You should. No, of course not. But Alex creates the sort of atmosphere where it's like, let's go fucking find him.
Right.
You know, like, he's an urban legend. That sort of thing. It's like, he's the Sasquatch. Let's go knock on Sasquatch's door.
That would be fun, though.
I mean, I get it. We drove past InfoWars Studios on that same sort of, like, not like we were ever going to knock on the door, but it was that sort of same, like, almost pilgrimage-y aspect of, like, let's go get into his space.
I am a little disappointed we didn't leave a flaming bag of dog shit or something like that.
We didn't have any dog shit.
No, that's true.
So I don't know.
Not with us.
I don't know, man. It's fucked up. It's fucked up that your audience would do that. It's fucked up that you had to go through that. And I kind of empathize a little bit because, like, even if you are the person who is creating that vibe, I still, as a human, am like, man, that's gotta suck.
Yeah, I agree. But at the same time, a Scott Pruitt's door should always be knocked on the moment he's about to sleep. He should be driven insane by one single knock. Every time his eyes close, just enough. Yeah, exactly.
I don't disagree in terms of what one deserves, but I'm just saying, as a human, I look at that and I'm like,
I agree.
Sucks. My empathy goes out the window when you remember, like, on our last 2009 episode, him telling people that, like, your family doesn't respect you and shit. So, like,
else do they have to go to?
Trust me. My empathy is thin. but it scares me, the idea of, like, anybody showing up at someone's door just because of the potential for something to go wrong, some misunderstanding. His wife and kids are there. You know, like, there's just too much that's like that. That, to me, I get really, like, that's a horror movie to me. What he's describing.
Yeah.
I'm Alex Jones. Someone who likes me knocks on my door.
Yeah.
That's a fucking horror movie.
Right. Right. Because you've cultivated people who are going to murder you.
Well, that's a baseline.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good... Okay. How legally actionable is this? We get a team of people. Roughly 24. Everybody, every hour, knocks on Scott Pruitt's door. Everybody gets their own hour. Everybody has to knock like two or three times.
I think.
Then they run away.
I think it's not a terrible plan, but because we're talking about it on air, it's a problem.
Right.
That's gonna get us in trouble.
But I'm just saying, like, is that illegal? I guess that's like a nuisance,
it's illegal individually for them because of like private property, probably.
Okay.
And then it's illegal for us because then it would be like conspiracy harassment. It would be like targeted harassment.
Okay.
Because we're organizing it.
Right. That's our problem.
Right.
We should not be doing this publicly.
Yeah. What we should do is go to this next clip.
Or go to our Facebook group.
Where Alex Jones brings in the arch weirdo.
Okay. Now I'm excited.
The guest we've all been waiting for.
Now I'm excited.
Very exciting to hear about this guy.
We're about to go to Lindsay. I just want to preface all of this. Lindsay comes on here when oil is $147+ a barrel, and he says within 6 months it'll be below 50.
All right, now I'm excited.
No one could have imagined that, but it came directly from top oil exec. And it's on record that Lindsay worked for these people. Now, right after the time Lindsay told me this, I have family in East Texas and in Houston who are all in oil. And
Daddy.
We've been waiting with bated breath with some family land we got because the gas wells and oil wells never get built down towards where our property's at. We're always, wow, that'd be great if that ever happened to us. And it stopped. Now they're, you know, back running around. But the whole point is that the inside scoop from oil companies was, and I even had dinner one time at my dad's house, and there was a oil company owner, but of one of the thousands of small ones who was there, and he was saying, and this is about 6 months ago, that, yeah, they're planning to drop the price. So this is after Lindsay tells me this, I start putting feelers out in the kind of mid-level, because, I mean, oil is the biggest industry here in Texas, bigger than telecommunications, bigger than computers.
Okay. So the guest, who is the complete weirdo.
All of which are connected to Ross Perot, strangely enough.
Weird. There's a guest who's named Pastor Lindsay Williams, who is going to be on the show.
Alex, I don't like it when you say pastor and they are on InfoWars. That's not going to bode well.
Always indicative that their faith is secondary to something else.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll get into his weird predictions and his stupidity here in a few. But I want to say, I was able to find a website that is a catalog of people's mineral rights, because all of that's very public information.
Yeah.
You can find this information. David Jones owns a number of different oil plots.
Well, of course David Bowie owns a lot of oil
plots. Not David Bowie.
Oh, not David Bowie.
David Jones, Alex's dad.
Oh, okay. So a different David Jones.
He owns a number of oil claims throughout the area of Texas that Alex is describing.
Huh.
So one of the things is that on those areas, like whenever you have something like this, you don't necessarily own the land. You own a claim to what's under the land.
Right.
And people share those. Like, it's all split up between X, Y, and Z people. And one of the things that I want to point out very clearly is that
I drink your milkshake.
Someone's drinking somebody's milkshake. But in 2008 and 2009, there's an artificial inflation of oil prices.
Right.
A lot of this is done because of panics that have happened around the world. Strikes in Ireland that
right.
you discussed in the past. Fear of things collapsing in the Middle East. There's
Venezuela.
There's all sorts of reasons that all sort of came together at exactly the same time and led to a hyperinflation of the price of oil. It lasted throughout a bit, like almost the year of 2008, and then the bottom fell out.
Yeah.
So in the beginning of 2008, the oil holdings estimated revenue on a monthly basis that Alex's dad would have been taking in from the plots of land that he had a claim on were $55,242.
Monthly.
Monthly.
Gotcha.
Monthly $55,000 just from the ownership of the oil.
Right.
Not, he doesn't have to extract it at all. Someone else does all of that.
He gets $600,000 for free every year.
Yep. There's the contracts. Yeah. That's who he's getting it from is from the people who are taking it out.
Yes.
To begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably that small oil company owner who's
right.
coming to dinner that Alex
right.
is describing.
Right.
So now if you go a little bit further and you get into where we are in 2009, end of 2008, you see that Alex Jones's dad's holdings are probably only worth about $10,000 a month.
Ooh.
So you go from $55,000 down to around $10,000, and like as it goes on, it's even worse. But the reality is that was the hit that comes from the price of oil normalizing.
Yeah.
Back down to, and granted, when it fell to a lower level than it was before, but they're pretending this $140 a barrel oil is normal. That's the hyper way up level because of all the geopolitical fears.
Yeah.
It came down to like 30 something and then rebounded to, you know, a
more
normal level.
Right.
It was only at like 60.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're talking about 60 to 30, that's still, a 50% drop.
Yeah.
That could be what you want to talk about, but instead they use the 140 hyperinflated number from only 6-9 months earlier.
Of course.
But it's super interesting to me that discretionary income in the Jones family
disappears right around the time
it's very mysterious.
Where he might need money.
It's very mysterious, and I'm only bringing
and somebody who has a lot of money might need a propagandist.
I'm only bringing this up because he brought this up. You know, like, he brought up his dad's involvement and all that shit. So that's the only it's relevant. This information that I found. It's weird. I mean, like, I don't know what, I don't know what it means necessarily, but,
I don't know.
I think that it would, like, I don't have a radio studio that, my parents are providing or anything like that.
Right.
But I do think that your family's life would change if you lost $40,000 a month.
Yeah.
In just random income.
Right.
You know, like, I don't think that that's irrelevant at all. Like, that's huge.
Yeah.
That, cause his dad is still a dentist. Like, his dad has his job, like his life job. And then just because of the shit he owns, he's getting $55,000 a month.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time though, it was a one time, it was like a massive windfall that you couldn't really budget for. So unless they went wild on spending for a year, which is entirely possible if you have a $500,000 that you weren't expecting showing
right
up.
Right around when Alex changed studios.
Ooh, boy. But that's not good.
But also, like,
that says overhead got a little bit harder to afford very quickly.
But they're also, like, if you look at what happened before that huge spike in oil prices, they were still under $20,000 a month that was coming in. Like, it went up in 2006 to peak just over the $20,000 a month mark for his holdings. And then it was sort of leveling around there. You know, it was leveling around there in the high tens, just south of 20,000. Then you bump it up to 55,000, you all of a sudden have 30,000, 35,000 extra dollars a month.
Yeah. So either you budget that and plan for it to drop down again, which it would, you have to assume it would, or you go apeshit crazy and buy yourself a new studio.
Right, and I don't know if his dad is necessarily budgeted all of this and become, like, super thrifty, I'm going to live out the rest of my days, considering he's now the HR representative for InfoWars.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, like, I think his dad might be so much more invested in this company than anyone is really dealing with.
Yeah.
I think he might be a part of it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. I think that...
Huh.
I think that his, he's accidentally revealed... Well, he didn't reveal it. I looked that up.
Yeah.
But he's accidentally opened that can of worms a tiny bit to look at, like, oh, interesting. Interesting that you, for a year, had a giant amount of money coming into your family that wasn't there before. And then after that, you're getting into a position where maybe some of your narratives change.
Yeah.
Curious.
Yeah.
Not saying, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lindsay Williams.
Yes.
He is a pastor. He comes in and,
is he though?
I think he is. I don't know. This isn't one of those that I decided I was going to, like, call the Baptist church and find out.
Okay. Okay.
I don't care because he's apparently been a preacher for decades.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'm more concerned with him being just a outright liar. But he's good at one thing, flattering Alex.
This is all planned by the elite. Let me assure everyone out there in Alex Jones' audience, in InfoWars, folks, everything you are hearing Alex Jones say is true. Believe every word you hear every day. It may sound unbelievable.
That is bad advice.
Right. But
just even if you're not talking about InfoWars.
Right. But
I would never say to anybody, believe every single thing every single day.
He knows the scam.
Ah.
It's very clear that
it's a good scam.
He knows how to get Alex Jones to, like, not question his shit. Just flatter him a bunch. So Lindsay Williams, I'm just going to flesh this out as best I can because I don't think he spells this out in any of these clips. He claims that he went to Alaska in 1971. 3 years later, the Trans-Alaska pipeline was beginning construction, and quote, out of concern for the spiritual welfare of the pipeliners, he volunteered to be the chaplain of the pipeline.
Mm.
He claims that because of being a volunteer chaplain, he was granted, quote, executive status with the oil company, and was welcomed into secret meetings, and gained access to all sorts of information
what?
They were keeping secret from the world.
Hold on.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait.
That's red flag.
Stop!
All
stop
over the
your
place.
Story That's before crazy. You began.
Yeah.
What?
What do you want to know? What are you questioning?
Is this standard practice
to bring the chaplain into? Hey, we're fucking over the world meetings.
Yes.
I feel like it's a bad move. I feel like if you're a shady executive, you'd probably be like, hey, that guy likes God. He's probably gonna have a higher power than money. Let's not bring him into our fucking secret meetings
now. Other side of that question, if you are an executive, chances are you looked at that guy and you were like, oh, I'm scamming like you. Maybe you should join my scam and then we'll all scam together.
Who knows if he had that same energy in 71?
Oh, that's
true. You know what I'm saying?
74.
So that to me, like, I know your response was 100% right. That story doesn't pass the smell test in any way.
Uh-uh.
First of all, I don't know why you're like, oh, there's a pipeline. They need a chaplain. Okay. All right. Fine. Weird.
Well, you know what's strange enough? That one makes the most sense, at least.
It does make the most sense, but only
preachers love to chaplain shit.
Only because the rest of it is such bullshit.
Yeah.
It only makes sense because the rest of it's like, what? Like that's like, all right, there's people there you want to preach. Okay.
Great.
Sure.
Now you're the chaplain because nobody said it's not an elected position if you're the volunteer chaplain.
No. And I don't know how the volunteer chaplain gets executive status.
He's a man of God. Yay. You got to have a man of God in there whenever you're building pipelines, Dan.
So I watched a hour and a half DVD that he put out where he was telling his story. And it's Swiss cheese, baby. There is just holes everywhere like this. There's just like, why? Okay. So your chaplain, they let you into the secret meeting. I don't believe that.
Right.
Number one.
No.
Number two, that's 1974 that you're doing that. What did they let you in on?
And why? 70s. They let everybody into those secret executive meetings at the time. They didn't wear shoes. It was a whole thing.
So that was for a little while. Right? That he was doing that?
Yeah.
That certainly didn't continue until present day. So where's your information coming from? Right? It's not from those people in the 70s that let you into the boardroom. All that could have possibly happened back then is you heard about scams that they were doing and you didn't tell anybody. So that's on you. That's on you.
That is kind of on him.
Right. So all you can do is...
Unless they left a detailed plan.
Okay. All he can do at this point from that time is say all the things that did happen and say that he knew about it ahead of time.
Ah, there we go.
The sort of ex post facto propaganda, as it were.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I knew about that ahead of time. This guy at that meeting told me about it.
Yeah.
And as we go along, that's all this guy's got. That is all he has. It's just talking about things that have already happened and been like, oh yeah, someone told me about that.
Great.
I knew about that. I had a high level insider source.
Love it.
Yeah. So, in this next clip, he's going to talk, I believe, about, the predictions for America.
They have planned this thing worldwide in order to do what they wish to accomplish. Now let me tell you what's going to happen in America.
I do want to
point out what is happening right today. Now, folks, watch this. I hope you have pencil and paper and you're taking notes. This man said to me, this person who knows everything, 82 years of age.
Three globalists
and a hot tub. Everything the elite are doing. He said to me, after I'd been threatened, and I agreed to go along with what he said, and there's certain things I couldn't even say on Alex Jones' show today in order to keep the sanity of my household.
Soft rice
and
hard rice, baby.
And keep myself... In keeping their word, he said to me, he said, Lindsay, he called me chaplain. He said, America will see a financial collapse that will be so great that it will take years to come out of it. At that time, we didn't have the bank crisis. We didn't have the real estate crisis. We didn't have the big bailout packages we've got right now. He told it all to me ahead of time because they had it planned exactly as you've been hearing Alex Jones say on his program day after day after day, folks. I wish I could shout it into every one of his homes today. Believe everything you are hearing Alex Jones say. Even if you have trouble believing it, you believe it anyway.
That's a man of God right there. Hey, even if it doesn't pass the spell test, believe it. Just believe it. I know that I know that I know, baby. Just believe it.
So, I mean, you're hearing this.
So he
take some notes.
He's hearing this plan in 71.
No.
To 74.
No, that's when he would have, 71 is when he showed up in Alaska. 74 is when he started chaplaining at this pipeline.
Okay.
And that went on for a couple years, I believe.
Okay.
So he was out by 80.
Right. Okay. So he knows, though, it's because of that information.
Nope.
Oh, so he's got different information.
He knows a guy.
He knows a guy.
He said he's 82 years old. Some guy who's 82 years old. He has an inside elite source that he talked to.
Another chaplain?
So he claims that he has a secretive insider source who told him about the 2008-2009 crash, that it was going to happen before it did. The problem with his prediction is the same with all of his and all of Alex's prognosticators, all of his guests. which is that they are doing, what they're doing is seeing something happen, then claiming they were told it was going to happen by an inside source before it did. It's the easiest fucking con in the game, and honestly, it's embarrassing. And only made worse by the fact that almost all of this guy's not so vague they become meaningless predictions, like there's going to be trouble in the Middle East. So
ooh, that's a good one, though.
Those sort of predictions. Everything else has been utter shit. He claimed that the devil's messiah was supposed to show up in 2012. The dollar was supposed to have collapsed a number of times by now, or what he has called a, quote, global currency reset. So many bad.
Global currency. They turned it off and on again.
Yeah, yeah. Like a modem.
That's a smart move.
It's so many bad predictions about silver and gold prices, which he also is pushing and as well as oil prices. He's just been wrong about almost every specific that he's ever thrown out. But he's talking about this because he's got it from this inside source.
It's fun when they start to believe their own bullshit and they make specific predictions. Like, that's my favorite part, whenever they reveal how stupid they are, where it's like, oh, shit, I am getting all of these things right, forgetting that they're saying it after it's already happened. So they're like, well, now I can throw around predictions willy-nilly.
That's where the problem comes.
Yeah.
Because also the issue is that, based on his narrative, he was, you know, with the elites and the oil company and that shit in the 70s, and then now he has this insider source who's telling him things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
They should never be wrong. He's not guessing.
You know, yeah.
Based on his narrative, he's not guessing.
Right. It's not really a prediction so much as it is revelation.
Yes, he's whistleblowing.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
it were.
Whistleblowing is a great way of putting it.
That's what he pretends he's doing. So there's trouble there. His whole, I mean, even, so the idea that he was the chaplain there and he became an executive and then was in meetings and stuff, bullshit. That's crazy. Then, you have this insider.
Isn't that the plot to a Michael J. Fox movie, The Secret to My Success?
Probably.
Yeah.
Then the other part, I've got this insider source who's telling me all this stuff. That's bullshit. All of this is bullshit.
Right.
Anybody who's not, like, using him for their own goals.
Right.
Like Alex probably is, would be like, dude, stop it. This is crazy. So he gets into this next clip, and this, I think, is hilarious.
The average American doesn't have the slightest idea. Now, jot down two words for me. Number one is tax structure.
Because that's two words.
Of the price of crude oil going from $147 a barrel to $33.80 a barrel yesterday morning, at the gas pump, it went down from $4 to $5 a gallon to $1.50 a gallon. In some states, went down as low as $1.30 a gallon.
So he's going to ramble, but just keep in mind.
So keep in mind, write down these two words.
Tax structure.
One, tax structure.
He doesn't get to the second one. I think it's probably just those two.
Oh, okay.
But like the thing is, like, it's not like gas has been $140 a barrel for more than a few months.
Yeah.
It's been months that it's been that. It's not like, oh no, what do we ever do now that it's down?
Yeah.
It's not. Anyway.
And in one East Coast state. As a result of that, the federal government, the states, and others have lost three-fourths, 75% or more, of their tax base.
Now that he's pretending that all taxes come from oil, which is not accurate at all.
So he's saying that because oil, specifically,
yes,
went from $130 a barrel down to $40, that means that the entire tax system
lost 75% of its tax base. Which is ludicrous.
All right.
Now, that doesn't show up for 2 to 3 months. Now, they come out with a stimulus package on yesterday. Listen to this. I was just reading over all of the money that would be given away in Denver. They're going to the university in Denver. They're going to improve, for instance, a ramp coming off of the interstate. They're going to improve bridges. They're going to build this and build that. Do you realize that when I read the amount that they're giving for each of those things, that it was approximately only 40%? Now, mark this, folks. If they gave you, say, $10 million, and you were supposed to build a new ramp off of such and such of an interstate with this and improve the parking lot in the college, do you realize that they only gave you approximately 60% of what it would take to do that? That's right. In the stimulus package, they have intentionally planned it, and it's all, not a single congressman read the stimulus package. And I can see why. Because now, how are states going to be able to fund the additional 40% of all of these items that are listed in the stimulus package?
other taxes next year.
Did he just make an argument for why the stimulus package didn't go far enough, which is the progressive argument at the time?
He accidentally did in trying to impugn it, but yeah. Also, so like you got stimulus checks.
Who stopped it from being that? But why aren't you yelling at the GOP?
That doesn't serve his argument.
Okay.
But the thing is like, individual people got stimulus checks for like a couple $100s, you know, that sort of thing.
It's good stuff.
Right. But how are they supposed to live for the rest of their lives?
Look.
A stimulus.
Give a man a fish.
A stimulus doesn't cover everything. Like the idea, it gets you going. That sort of thing.
It stimulates motion.
Where's the rest of the money going to come from? It's going to come from the money that comes later.
Stimulus does not have multiple meanings.
No.
It's just that one.
It like the idea of like, oh, so this big like load of money that they gave is going to pay for 60% of this very needed project. Where the rest is going to come from? Regular budget, next year's taxes.
Yeah.
All of that makes perfect sense. This argument is so stupid.
Have you read this bill? Do you know what it does? I just looked it up in Denver. It improves their infrastructure, which they need, and it does it at a really high percentage. And since more people are going to be there, that tax money is going to be – this is evil. It's part of their plan, Dan.
I would say even a 60% improvement on like infrastructure issues is pretty good.
It's massive.
So I don't know. This is ludicrous. Like the idea that he's sort of presenting the idea that all taxes come from oil. Well, granted, a lot of tax does come from oil, but it's not all of it. It's not even most necessarily.
No.
So that's stupid on one hand. And then the other is I like your angle on it better than mine. The idea of like, you're actually arguing it should have been more.
Yeah.
That's kind of a better take on it.
It's like when Fox News is showing all of the policy principles that Alexandria is pushing and they're like, she wants you to have healthcare? That's evil.
She wants you to have food?
She wants you to eat?
Bullshit.
Monster. Yeah. Look at all the things that you should be afraid of. Healthcare, education, roads. Modern life.
Yeah.
And food for your family. Right. You don't want that.
Right.
That's evil.
Evil. So Lindsay Williams is, full of shit, dude. Like, it's crazy. He's one of the worst guests I've ever seen on the show. And like I said, I watched a bunch of his other stuff.
Uh-huh.
I was going to get clips from that, but it's too boring. It's just, it's nonsense. But the thing I really want to drive home is like, he's not saying shit. These predictions are all, like, after the fact. They're just validating his nonsense story. But the reason he's able to pull it off is because he knows the game.
A number of times different people have said, Lindsay, why don't you please call this man back and get some more latest information? I'm going to admit to you, Alex, I've been afraid to.
So that is in reference to this source that he has. People keep asking him to call him back. Hey, find out what else is up. And then he's like, I'm too scared to call that guy back. Burr, 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 burr. When you have now made yourself a public persona that's dependent on this guy's information. You call that asshole back. No matter what, if you're him.
You don't call that asshole back. You say you called that asshole back and you make up whatever it is you want.
Which is actually,
didn't even call the asshole in the first place.
Spoiler alert. That's what he starts doing a couple years after 2009.
Okay. All right. So. All right. Sounds right.
I'm frightened to even think of what he might tell me. Now, what do I make of this? The fact that they have accelerated that. Here it is.
So, just to give you some context, the question that Alex asked is like, what do you think about the idea that oil has gone down so far?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's gone down so far so quickly. So that's what he's referring to there.
Alex, the reason they have done this in my mind's thinking is because they realize that programs like yours, people like Alex Jones have awakened so many people that the American people are beginning to rebel. Over 20 states now have said,
no,
we are sending a message to Washington that we're no longer going to be under your control. This is another whole subject within itself. Now, let's go back to why they're doing this. Alex, when I lived with these people, I found that there was only one thing they were afraid of. The dollar didn't bother them. They had control of that. Congress didn't concern them. The president, they didn't mind him at all. He's just a little puppet sitting up there. What is the one thing that I found that these people are scared to death of? They are afraid of the American public, the masses of people waking up, and that's where Alex Jones' show comes in. That's where InfoWars comes in. That's where InfoWars.com comes in. Every bit of this
is a good plug-in.
That frightens them more than anything else in this world is because when the masses of people wake up, they don't have a chance. There's a handful of them, and there's millions of us. And I believe, Alex, the reason that they have, what should I say, accelerated their program worldwide, not just in America, but worldwide, and gone below $50 a barrel, the reason I believe they've done it is because such masses of Americans are waking up just because of people like you, Alex.
Amazing.
That's
amazing.
That is bootlicking of the highest order.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a solid move right there. He did a little bit of research. He listened to the show. He figured out what talking points were hot right now. He barreled him back at him. And now, Dan, I'm going to say he's going to get to the cell.
No, I mean, he does I don't think at this point he has, like, his DVD empire that he does later.
Uh-huh.
He ends up coming back on InfoWars a bunch, and, like, he gets much more of his own cottage industry and shit.
His followers go from 100 to 300.
Yeah. Much like Glenn's. So the basic conspiracy that he's pitching but never really spells out on the show is that the globalists are trying to crash the price of oil, in order to buy up the assets of oil companies.
Of course.
Then they're going to foment revolutions all over the world in order to push the price of oil back up to about $200, $300 a barrel.
That's high.
At which point they're going to reveal all the secret oil reserves that they control that they've pretended didn't exist until that moment, which he knows about from back when he was in the 70s,
okay,
working with these oil executives as a volunteer chaplain.
But wouldn't that lower the price of oil then?
No, because they'd get $200, $300 a barrel for all this oil they got.
Yeah, but if they reveal that they have more oil, then that would drive down the price. No, because commodities are based on scarcity, right?
I know shushing is your bit, but yeah. It would ruin the entire scam. Yep. It's kind of a big problem.
So they're going to commit this scam,
right?
And then invalidate that scam after a couple of years and go, ha-ha, fooled you.
They're going to pull off a 40-years-long con in order to bring the price of oil up really high, sell off some of it at that price, but then by revealing all the oil that they have, normalize the price back down so they could just make what they could make now.
So the globalists,
without doing the scam.
The globalists are trying to pull a 40-year-long punked episode.
More or less, yeah.
Gotcha.
It seems that way. So Williams' record with predictions is so bad that even Alex's fans
have... How bad is it?
So bad that even Alex's fans have turned against him.
Oh.
The conspiracy theory world hates him. From a post on Real Truth Online with the headline, "It's practically unanimous at Prison Planet, oil insider Lindsay Williams is full of shit." The article is about a mini rebellion that's taking place in the InfoWars forums against Lindsay Williams. Quote, "The outrage seems to stem from the fact that Williams tends to pop up and make appearances on the Alex Jones show every time there's a world crisis that affects the price of crude oil. As to claims Williams has made about being in danger for his whistleblowing, quote, Williams claims that he's received threats in the past begs the obvious question. Why does he keep risking his life every 3 to 4 months to bring us his startling revelations?
It's a good question.
Why wouldn't he anonymously send Jones this information if it's so earth-shattering? After all, that's what you'd really do if you're a whistleblower, secret information, and you wanted to remain alive. I'll tell you why. Because Williams cannot make a goddamn penny if he's giving up his information anonymously. It's all about the almighty dollar.
Dan, that is so cynical.
So
he is trying to save us. Because the only way to stop the globalists is if the American people wake up. This is an altruistic effort.
Some comments from the InfoWars forum.
Now I'm in.
This is something we've not really dove into in the past.
Give me some cuck. I want to hear some cuck bullshit.
It's time to actually hear from the InfoWarriors themselves.
Oh, no.
Quote, "I know Jones ain't the sharpest tool in the shed, but even my granny could recognize Williams for what he is, a bullshitting opportunist."
All right. I like it.
There's another one.
Strict and to the point.
Quote, "There's a clear script and formula. It's not at all improvised. I think many are coming to the conclusion he's just trying to sell DVDs.
What?
Here's another one. Quote, I've been a huge fan of Alex Jones for the past 8 years, but sadly today I just can't stand listening to this kind of bullshit.
Lindsay Williams
is Alex Jones in 5 to 8 years from now. Sadly today I just realized that Alex is just in it for the money and I have nothing against him for making a living, but this is too much.
Thank God!
It seems like a waste of my time when it's just so transparent that he and Lindsay are mostly cut from the same cloth.
God damn it! I was about to say with that last comment, they're like, he's clearly just in it for the money. It's like, go the next step!
Yeah.
So is your boy, Alex!
And they do.
And then we finally get the guy.
Quote, dead air would be more informative than this guy.
Nice.
And then the last one, quote, the main question needs to be asked. If he's getting passed along information from others, why would he ever be wrong even once? So it's nice to have this glimpse into the world of InfoWarriors.
According to the Art of War, disinformation is important for both enemies and allies.
Sure, and Alex's. So, I mean, we got this guy, and I guess I might have oversold it a little bit based on the content that he's bringing to the table, but, like, it is really fascinating to me, like, how clear he knows the game, that is flatter Alex and you'll be one of his go-to guys.
Oh, yeah.
And Alex is falling for it. Like, he's absolutely falling for it to the point where there's a rebellion. This is only 6 months after the episode we're listening to.
Oh,
this
shit.
Rebellion in the InfoWars chat room.
That was fast.
Well, it's because he comes back later, which we'll get to down the road in our investigation if we just keep moving forward,
right,
where he comes in and he has now introduced his line of DVDs.
Yeah.
He's starting to sell things, much like John Rappaport does.
Right.
You sell these DVDs. He's not doing much plugging on this episode because he's laying the groundwork.
Right.
He's not in the rotation yet.
He's laying the seeds if we're going to prosperity gospel this.
Absolutely. This is a seed for later growth.
Yes.
So... The reason that I think it's interesting is you see like a brilliant con man whose actual con is terrible, but his game is good.
His game is solid.
His game is good in terms of like knowing this guy will help me move. Units.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But the actual con is so thin that the listeners see through it. In terms of like you're wrong about all these predictions consistently.
Which is a fucking heavy con to pull on Alex Jones's listeners when even they can see through it. You're bringing some weak sauce.
That's kind
get of get into a rewrite. Why do these guys never get into like just get into a writer's room?
Right.
Just get in there and
do
be like, what's the best con for here? Why am I fucking up?
Yep.
Let's do some. How about this? Have a couple focus groups.
Sure.
See what cons they're gonna go with. If you can afford a $10,000 press room that nobody goes to, invite a couple of your friends. Put them down. Get a survey going. Figure out what con's going to work best for them.
I agree. If I can tell you.
That's what I would. If I was going to become a con man, right, I would do that first. Get a basic business plan set up. Take it to the bank. Say, look, I'm going to be conning. Here's my scam. The bank is going to be like, we're amoral, so it doesn't matter. Let's lend you $20,000. Go con to your heart's content. Come on, man. That's brilliant.
Yeah. You also have a good community in front of you, like a real diverse crowd within stand-up comedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get some friends who are also very creative.
For sure.
Help you find the holes.
We could all con. Why are we comics?
Open mics need to turn into like scam operations.
I know.
There's so many people waiting to go on stage.
Right.
There's no reason to be sitting there watching someone do their fucking 3 minutes
over
again.
You're just thinking about your own.
Everyone needs to be at the back of the room coming up with elaborate scams. Why not? Everyone else is just like smoking weed in the in the alley and being like, ah, that guy's joke sucks. You're wasting time. Come up with a con.
Open mic 11. That's what we're going to be pitching.
The last like years that I did stand up, instead of sitting at the back of the room doing nothing and slamming shots, if I was actually sitting there talking with somebody like, all right, here's what we're going to fucking do.
All right.
I would be a millionaire right now instead of doing this podcast.
Here's what you need to know. Bank of America has one weak spot and it's a lovely teller. Her name is Danica.
Wrong kind of con.
Danica is the one who's going to get us into the manager's office. The manager, he's fucking garbage. You're going to hate this
Jordan.
Guy. Yeah.
This isn't a con. That's a caper.
Oh, okay.
You need to be
playing the
right game.
You're right. What cons are we doing?
It would be sitting around and figuring out a way to come up with like a bullshit diet product or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that would work.
That would make much more money, and it wouldn't be illegal immediately.
That's true. That's true. It would take a while to yeah, get illegal.
Exactly. Right. You can make millions of dollars before it actually like came
right.
back on you.
And then as an open micer, you can just bail.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah. You just be like, hey, I got another con to get to. I'm sorry I can't stick around for the rest of the show.
I want to tell you about what's going on in my heart right now, and that is that I feel like I oversold the guest. I think that he's crazy to me, but on paper, maybe, like, in presentation, maybe he's not as crazy. I think that there's some obviously fun things about how he's a clear liar and he's a brown noser and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think I might be more into him than he deserves to be.
The problem is that crazy does not necessarily mean wacky. I think a lot of people, when you say, like, this guest on Alex Jones is crazy, most people are thinking, oh, he's a wacky guest. He's going to say some wild shit.
This guy's
crazy in like a canny, like idiotic way.
It doesn't always read necessarily. Yeah. But then also, I think that any critic that I'm imagining in my head can't fucking take away the fact that, I've not seen any guest that there's been an insurrection on InfoWars forums about.
That's true.
So that's pretty
true.
Crazy.
I think it was worth it just for the comments.
Absolutely.
I think it was worth it to listen. Was worth it to listen to this guy just because he was so transparently bad at this. Somebody stopped listening to the show.
Well, and now we know as we move forward when we hear him, like we know the game he's going to be playing.
Yeah.
And how he's going to be pissing off the InfoWarriors
as
it goes
along. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So that'll happen in 2009. But we got one more clip here, and that is from a caller. You know, this guy's dumb.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Tom. Nice to speak to you, too. I don't know if this has any bearing on anything. But July 24th, after Barack Obama's speech in Berlin, I watched him come out the rear of the building, and him and one reporter and one cameraman only, and he stated, what was the purpose of your speech? And he said, so Christians, Jews, and Muslims can worship as they choose together, because I'm a Muslim. He said, he repeated that question two times. Do you think that will have any effect on how he governs our...
So hold on. Let's pause for a second and imagine that interview. Why did you give that speech? Well, so Muslims, Christians, and Jews.
So people can all get along.
I'm a goddamn Muslim. That the very idea of that is so hilarious.
Also, it doesn't even play into their fears.
Nope.
Like that, that concept is him being like, I want to bring the world together so we stop killing each other because I'm a Muslim. Mm. And you're like, oh, so that's a good thing?
Aren't you guys still complaining that he's a member of Reverend Wright's church?
Aren't
you guys still on that narrative?
It's because he's a Muslim Reverend Wright church. Christian monster with and he's got Weather Underground.
But man, it's so funny. Just the idea, like in my mind, I'm picturing it and it's like behind this venue. Uh-huh. He comes out and he's like, I'm a Muslim. Like, it's just like, the idea that he's just like, yeah. I don't know how to play it out in words, but the picture in my head is so fucking hilarious.
I see. Now here's what I imagine. All right. Obama walking out the back door. He's got his bodyguard. There is a row of children all wanting autographs.
Right, right.
Now the reporter comes up to him and he's like, what did you do? Why did you give that speech? He's in the middle of signing an autograph. He's signing it. He kind of stops for a minute. He goes, cause I want Jews, Muslims, and Christians all to get along together. Grabs the autograph note, tears it up, throws it in the crowd.
Slits
and says,
the girl's throat.
Cause I'm a Muslim.
Booyah!
Oh, I'm out of here.
Mic drop. So stupid.
Country.
It's already having effect. Look at the bill he signed yesterday. And he made the statement. He said, I was elected president. I will draw up the bill the way I want it.
Well,
Trump never said that.
It's disgusting for him to, the very next day, run a reporter down who asked him to admit that he was a Muslim man. And also one last point about how to prepare. I was told by a gun store owner that people need to start vacuum sealing ammunition and
if you
guns.
Can get it.
Yeah. If you can get it, it's sold out.
If you can even buy it. If you can buy a gun right now, you're a fortunate man. If you can buy ammunition, you go look for it. You try to find it.
Gold is selling out. Silver, Ted's almost sold out right now. Thank you for the call.
Kind of an ad pivot.
Wow, did we get there?
Kind of an ad pivot there. So do you know what happened with bullets around this time? So Alex likes to pretend that the
I don't really keep a tab on bullets.
Alex likes to pretend that the government was just buying up all the ammunition.
I do remember him talking about that.
The 2008 election of Barack Obama triggered increased sales in both firearms and ammunition. USA Today reported that in Wyoming, the run on bullets and reloading components reached such a frenzy that a Cheyenne dealer began rationing sales and said she was also selling semi-automatic rifles as fast as she could put them on the shelves. The issue was not ever that the government was buying up stuff. It was that these people, these propagandists, were creating such a fervor of they're going to take your guns that everyone bought out the stock so fucking fast that there was a legitimate years-long ammunition shortage.
So that was the 1929 stock market crash of bullets.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, you can look into it. There was a almost five-year-long just run on bullets. That was happening because of all this fear of, like, you can't get it.
God damn it.
You can't get guns. You can go to a gun show at any fucking point and find anything you want.
You know what's bananas?
I went to gun shows around this time, and I could find guns.
See, now that seems like the obvious answer, because at the time, we got so many, like, is America ready for a black president? When you see that ammunition sales are, stocks are disappearing, the answer is no, guys. The answer is no. If people are buying more semi-automatic weapons, America is not ready for a black president.
Not just guns, or not just ammo, also guns, all of it.
Yeah.
It was because of the fear that these right-wing propagandists pushed forth. And that's to me, I think this is a good place to end the episode because it's so the perfect narrative for them. Because they are the cause of it.
Yeah.
And they also are benefiting from the lack of product. You know, like their rhetoric about there being a black president is what caused the run on ammunition.
Right.
The run on ammunition is something that they then get to use as like the government's buying up all the ammunition.
Right.
Because there's a black president. Be scared of that.
It's a
perfect circle.
You go
to the store, you can't find any ammunition.
Yeah.
It's the evergreen tree of propaganda that's fucking gorgeous. And you see this sort of thing and you're like, I don't think there's any hope.
But this
there's
again,
no hope.
This again to me is what's fascinating about white people. Because I do kind of think we might be aliens. Because we're way wrong. Here's what they're really saying. The entire propaganda is, oh shit, there's a black president. Now black people are going to do to us what we did to them. So we need to buy guns.
But they wouldn't say it that way.
Right. They wouldn't say it that way, but that's the real heart of all of their fears, is they're aware. Like, the more they get bitchy about, I don't want to feel guilty for being white.
Right.
What they really mean is, I don't want to be punished for all the shit that I know we did.
I don't want it brought up how much I've been in advantage because of brutality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if we give them power, which is the way they view it, then they'll figure out our game, and then we're going to be the ones who are enslaved. And you know what?
I mean, we already talked about
I think being a slave is wrong. For me. And I mean, other people, it's a different story, but for me.
I mean, we already talked about this in the last episode when we were talking about that pastor's Muslim fears about if there's more of them, then they'll destroy all of us.
Right.
What he's really saying is a fear of, like, I want to do that. I think they would do that if they had one more. It's like,
That's why I can't get my head, I can't stop talking about that is because on some intrinsic level, that suggests they are well aware that white people have committed the worst crimes.
I 100% know that they are well aware of that.
Yeah.
They have to be.
And so it boggles my mind. It really does.
It's crazy.
You can either accept that reality and move forward with it, or you can do the white thing, which is create your own alternative reality where you're always the best.
And apparently, that's super profitable.
Yeah, super good.
Yeah. So that brings us to the end of this 2009 investigation. We are getting dangerously close to the beginning of the public tea party. Very excited to see what happens with that. We'll be there shortly. But for now, what we've learned, not a lot.
Nope.
Mostly stuff we already knew.
Yeah.
Just with some.
It was a fun way. Well, it was a fun ride.
We learned about, Francois Mitterrand.
I liked Francois Mitterrand.
So, I mean, who cares?
Yep.
I hope you all enjoyed this. We'll be back real shortly. And big announcement coming up. Very excited about that.
I know. It is a big announcement.
We are just one sliver of a human's hair length, much like at CERN, away from being able to make this announcement.
All three or four of those atoms.
Absolutely.
Hair's length.
But if you like the show, please go to our show. I was about to say Infowars.com.
Check the comments section in 2009 and then have a good time.
KnowledgeFight.com. That's our website. You can find more about the show. Also,
click the support the show button, please. Donate.
Nice.
We are, we're doing, whoo boy.
In case anyone thinks that there's anything other than exactly what it appears to be going on with the show, there isn't. We do not have sponsors other than listeners. And this show.
We definitely don't even have fake sponsors like Chrysler.
This show is us. We do not have an intern. There is no one else doing anything. Well, except, you know, very nice listeners who every now and again will post things, and that's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
But, like, there's nothing behind us. There's no, business or anything. It's you and me sitting in my goddamn bedroom. Recording the show to the chagrin of my roommates because we are very loud.
Immediately after you've donated, sold blood. So.
Right, yeah. So if you guys want to support the show, you know that you are supporting literally two dudes who are doing this show.
Yeah.
And that's it. Also we're on Twitter.
We are at @knowledge_fight.
That's right. We're on Facebook.
We are on Facebook.
Facebook
group. Go home, tell your mother.
iTunes.
You're brilliant. iTunes. Download the show. Leave a review. Spread the word.
Sure.
Don't
snitch.
Don't snitch.
Don't tell anybody about this goddamn show. You know what sucks? I don't use my personal Facebook account, and so I'm not able to respond to things really ever. So I'll see people who like mention me in, or not me, but the show in comments.
Uh-huh.
I'll see that on the Knowledge Fight account, and then I can't respond to those things. Like I saw, someone, I can't remember who it was, and I don't want to say in case they would want privacy, but, I saw someone comment on one of, comedian Derek Sheen's, posts.
Very funny.
He posted something about Alex Jones and InfoWars, and they posted, you should check out Knowledge Fight. And I wanted to, like, re-comment, hey, I know Derek Sheen. I've done shows with him. Or something like that. Hey,
right.
Hey, Derek, this is Dan Friesen. You know who I am. You should check out our show.
Yeah.
Like, but I can't, but I still appreciate people doing that.
Yeah, I did a show in the suburbs, and afterwards a dude came up to me who had been living in LA for a while, and he was like, oh man, you did a great job. I want to follow, what's your Facebook? What's your Twitter? What's your Instagram? I was like, I don't have Instagram. I left Facebook. I kind of have a Twitter. And he's like, no, you got to branch out. You're a brand and all of that. So that's when I immediately deactivated Twitter. And like, I'm on zero, I'm zero social networks right now.
Yeah, we need
and,
to do better.
It is exciting. Also, my brand is really suffering, Dan.
Yeah, we need to do better.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd like to thank you all for listening. I guess we've come to the end of this.
Yep. I believe it's on you today, sir. Who are we going to go with?
Boy, this is tough.
Yeah, there's a murderer's row.
Well, there's not. There's not a whole lot.
I don't know. I think the last guy with the accent.
Lindsay Williams.
No, the guy with the caller with the accent.
Yeah, the caller.
Can't do it.
It's tough to throw him under the bus.
I'm fine with throwing him under the bus.
Ah, I've got it.
Okay.
Sir, you have completely lied about a couple people who probably don't deserve the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, no! Not him!
You know,
but he's a folk hero.
Look, the Blairs are not to be deified or thought of as heroes. But
they're part of the Iraq war situation.
But because you are such a flagrant con man, you invalidate a lot of criticism against them that is very real.
Good point.
So I will say, Robert Foster, please do the world a favor and please go fuck yourself.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.